Welcome to Art Bell Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from December 20th, 1995.
From the high desert and the great American Southwest, I bid you all good evening or good morning, as the case may be, and welcome to another edition of Coast to Coast AM. Live talk radio throughout the nighttime, while others repeat, regurgitate, and recycle, we're actually here live from the Tahitian and Hawaiian Islands in the west, all the way out east to the Caribbean and the U.S. Virgin Islands, south, well into South America. I know that to be true. North to the pole. This indeed is Coast to Coast AM. You know, working these hours, I confuse myself half the time about which day I'm talking about. And I thought I had scheduled Emmanuel McLittle for Thursday. Last night, I think I said he would be on tonight. So I called up Emmanuel, and he said about the same thing. Anyway, he's here. Emmanuel McLittle is the founder, publisher, and editor-in-chief of something called Destiny Magazine. Grew up on Detroit's west side, so a lot of the hometown folk are going to be listening in Detroit. Attended Mumford High School, getting by with poor reading skills, non-existent study habits, and a lackluster work ethic like millions of young black males. He was programmed angry. During his senior year in high school, Emmanuel and his wife, now of 27 years, Sharon, became parents. They married, both finished high school at a later time, a high school dropout. Emmanuel eventually took a job as a security guard at Mercy College of Detroit. Very pedestrian thus far. While at Mercy, the school made tuition available to all full-time employees. And here's where I think Emmanuel takes off. Recognizing the opportunity, he found himself working to complete high school in the evenings while working during the day. At 21 years of age, he began his freshman year at Mercy College and caught fire with a thirst for reading. That'll do it. His favorite areas of interest were psychology, history, political science. In 2 years, he earned an associate degree. The, quote, taste of achievement, end quote, hooked him. In just 18 additional months, and I'll tell you, it's like a drug, this high school dropout graduated with a 3.6 grade point average, a Bachelor of Arts degree in sociology. The anger had been replaced with a drive to do something about the dark conditions in the very inner city he grew up in. A couple of more years, he earned a master's degree in psychology from the University of Detroit. By now, he was a different person altogether. A candidate for U of D's doctoral program, he had additional schooling to support his growing family. In the first job as a parole officer for the state of Michigan, a slow transformation, a morphing, I guess, of the morphing of Emmanuel. His political ideals began to take shape. Nothing would be the same after that. And now, I guess, well, we're going to find out. I wonder if he would label himself Emmanuel Little. Welcome to McLittle. Welcome to the program. How are you?
Good evening, Art. How are you? You're glad to be here.
You're up in Oregon or something, aren't you?
Yes, in the hills of Oregon, where I've lived for the last year and a half. And it is a move that has attached itself to the rear end of this morphing that you're talking about. Because another piece of my individuality that began way back in those years when I knew and began to progressively know that there was a reality out there different than what was in my head.
Well, it's a big change from inner city Detroit to the hills of Oregon.
Yes, it is.
Why? Why did you make that move?
Well, I don't know why. I sat as a young boy, and what I didn't know at the time was a confusing, sometimes angry, frequently unnourishing environment like millions of young black boys at 7 or 8 years of age. And I found comfort watching Hoff and Little Joe ride off into the sunset and sit around a huge fireplace with a living room that looked like all outdoors and speak about principles that I didn't hear spoken about in my home,
mm-hmm.
and a love for that outdoors, that distance, that freedom, that sense of family, touched me as a child and never left me.
What was your home like life?
Very large family, 14 brothers and sisters.
Oh, my.
A confusion, the typical problems between black male and black female in terms of my mother and father. My mother was dominant in our household. My father was less dominant and almost like one of the older brothers in a sense. And I'm being this descriptive because later on I will be equally as descriptive in terms of talking about some of the dynamics that exist in black homes today and the connection and links between that kind of environment and what we see as a continuing, lagging problem with blacks being on the bottom rung of the ladder.
14 children, Emmanuel.
All in one home at the same time.
That's impossible.
No, it isn't.
Well, I mean, it is certainly possible, but it's nearly impossible. Did your dad work?
Well, my dad was slung steel at Ford Motor Company's Ruerich plant in Dearborn, Michigan.
A good job.
Yeah, pretty good job. He was not around psychologically, provided little support in terms of growing, wondering, and developing young men, six of my brothers. And as I said earlier, I found frequent and comfortable escape watching those things like Bonanza on TV that took me to another place. And I think that was the genesis of my later years finding particular enjoyment not doing some of the things that some of my friends would do. I enjoyed a ride 80 miles away into the country, and I enjoyed the hills and the quiet and the cow poop and the sense of serenity that I found, and it never left me. And when I was able to decide what I was going to do in terms of where I was going to live, I found a place called Selma, Oregon, that provides a similar scenery and a similar feel to what I found very comfortable at 6 years old.
When you were watching Bonanza?
Yes.
Yeah, I guess it is like country, actually.
Yes.
But Bonanza was certainly not, it was not anywhere near the black culture. It depicted a very almost perfect, as you pointed out, value-laden picture of a rather well-to-do white early Western family.
Yes.
With very close ties.
And at that particular age, I didn't see color, nor did I see economic status. What I saw was a dad and sons who talked about life, who had something to say to each other that was frequently not argumentative, who put their lives on the line for each other in terms of defending each other's ideals and principles. There was a freedom there that I did not experience as a child. And I'm suggesting to you and your audience that as I grew and finally become age-educated about what it means for whole, happy development in a child, I can now suggest that all children have a sense of knowing about what is peaceful and what is happy and what is proper, and they don't know they have it.
Is your father alive now?
My father is dead 20 years.
Father is dead 20 years. Did you feel and do you now still feel anger toward your father?
No, I didn't feel, I felt anger towards my father and everyone else because anger was one of the personality characteristics that were considered the norm where I grew up. If you didn't, if you weren't angry at 13 years old and you didn't know how to fight at 14 and you didn't treat your girlfriend in a rough fashion, you were kind of like a punk where I grew up. And so, yes, my resentment frequently was directed towards my father, who I knew had a kind of a lacking in the sense that he was 20 years older than my mother. And I never saw anything loving in terms of their exchange with each other. I saw arguments and verbal violence more often than I saw anything else. And so I had a deep anger towards my parents because there was a sort of knowing inside of me, as there is in millions of young blacks today, that there was some responsibility on their part for the difficulties that I experienced as a young man thrust into a world that was not very friendly.
Okay, Emmanuel, back away from the phone just a little bit.
Okay.
And I think it'll be better. You're almost over-modulating a little bit.
Okay.
Now, listen, you're on the air right now in Detroit. And you're talking to, no doubt...
my brothers and sisters.
You've got it. And in the inner city, the same place you were.
Yes.
That you're not anymore.
Yes.
So what would you say to them? There are many of them traveling down a very different road than for some surprising reason you traveled. What happened to you? What can they take from what you did?
Well, I want to mention that I talk to them by way of a 60-page glossy magazine every other month. But the route that I took was one that I believe is offered to all of them. And when I say them, I mean there are brothers and sisters sitting in Detroit that I haven't seen or spoken to in 20 years.
Mm.
And it, this distance that exists between them and I is the result of my having moved in an entirely different and foreign direction as they. And it began with reading and finding out that I wasn't so stupid and throwing off this sense of inferiority that comes with anger, hostility that young men develop. And when I sat in a classroom with rather well-to-do white students at Mercy College, and I made the first discovery that I was not stupid, that I had some kind of understanding about life and other things that some of these students did not, and that I needed to do nothing but get the mechanics, the reading, the study habits, the discipline to make it through the course material, to carry a decent-sized load. And that happened for me in the very, very first year.
Well, but what made that happen? What was the genesis of it? Was there some light bulb that came down and went on over your head all by itself?
Yes, there was prior to my having got to Mercy College. Mercy College came as a result of a series of other things. My wife and I were parents at 18 and 19 years old, and we lived in the heart of Detroit's bowels, sort of like in its inner city. If you know where the Detroit riots started in 67, it was at a place called 12th and Claremont, where we lived in that vicinity when we were first married, because that is the place where you could get $50 a month apartments. Sometimes it had leaky roofs and rather cheap rent. And I had what I think to be somewhat of a revelation standing on my porch and watching the whores and the drug addicts walk down the street past my home. And I stood on my porch one day and watched my sons, who were 1 and 2 or 3 years old, playing in what should have been grass, but mud. And I just had a sense at that very moment that I had to get out of here, that I had to take my children out of here. And I had only one difficulty. I had a value system that was very similar to the mentality that I was surrounded by. And I had no money. And I had nothing of value except a 1965 Bonneville that had more expensive speakers and skirts, I don't know that you remember what skirts are, but
of course I
had skirts on my Bonneville, And
I remember them on Cars and Women. Hold on just one moment, Emmanuel. We'll be right back to you.
Coast to Coast AM sure sounds great in the middle of the night. But you know, you don't have to be nocturnal to enjoy this amazing show. The Coast Insider is your key to a normal life. For 15 cents a day, you can wake up refreshed knowing that last night's show is waiting for you with podcasting. Listen on your way to work and again on the way home. Or listen to one of over 1,000 archived shows from the past 3 years. As a member, you'll have access to our monthly live chat sessions with George Noory and special guests. The Coast Insiders Club is a must-have feature for all Coast to Coast AM listeners. Visit coasttocoastam.com to sign up today. You'll sleep like a baby, knowing you'll never miss your favorite guests and topics ever again. Remember, a one-year subscription comes out to only 15 cents a day. Sign up today at coasttocoastam.com. Looking for the truth? You'll find it on Coast to Coast AM.
I get asked at so many places, do you really believe that we're being visited? It's amazing how many people wonder about that. The visitations have been happening since the beginning of time, haven't they?
It is a very bizarre thing that is taking place. Look, we're having alien creatures visit this planet. Our government knows about it. They're telling us nothing about it. That is a very serious situation.
You're listening to Art Bell Somewhere in Time. Tonight's broadcast of Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell was recorded on December 20th, 1995.
Welcome back. Anyway, there you are in Detroit, angry, but somehow what I need to find out is if you know what happened to you that could happen to the people listening to you in Detroit and the other big cities, LA elsewhere. What is that thing?
Well, I think that what it is was to realize that there was no real bars that locked me into 12th and Claremont in Detroit.
I remember
there was nothing really there that held me back.
Yeah, I remember, Emmanuel, when I was young and lived in the Northeast, and we would ride through on the train areas, really rough areas of the Bronx and so forth, and I would look at the tenements there, and I would say, why would anybody stay there? Why wouldn't they run away? Why wouldn't they grab their family and every penny they could, you know, get their hands on and head for the hills?
Well, they don't because they are told that there's nowhere else to be. They don't because we are constantly told as blacks that there is a world out there that does not welcome us. We are given all kinds of illusions that actually create a psychological prison around those areas that we designate ourselves to live in, you see?
Well, how much truth is there in that? There's a germ, certainly, of truth in it. Now, there was a lot of racism in early America. We went through a metamorphosis, good word, again, and things seemed to get better for a while. Right now, frankly, I think they're getting worse again.
Yes, they are.
Why?
I think they're getting worse because we worked too hard to heal the wound, and the effort that we took to heal the wound actually tore it open again. And there is a little concept that says that there is a point in which one individual or a group of people, a race of people, has to overlook those injuries and harms that took place to them collectively at some time in the past. And for blacks, that did not happen. There is a sense in America that blacks have to get back, that we have to have some kind of reparations, that we have to be arrogant and angry and hostile towards the descendants of white people who mistreated us. And so, instead of taking the route that says in reality that there is a history in the human race where everybody has been somebody else's slave, and that at some point the getting back has to stop, and there has to be a leveling out of those feelings that demand revenge, you see? And so now we are in a place and a political position where we can demand reparations. We can demand a right to be racist ourselves. We can demand that you accept our harshness and our anger and our hostility. And in that state of mind,
all right, this
is it possible to know what the right amount of payback is? It is
all right. We will talk about reparations and payback and that kind of thing when we come back in just a moment. Emmanuel McLittle is my guest. There'll be more.
This is Premier Networks. That was Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM on this Somewhere in Time. Somewhere in Time. Tonight's broadcast of Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell was recorded on December 20th, 1995.
My guest is Emmanuel McLittle. He is the editor-in-chief of Destiny Magazine, aptly named, I guess. Came from the inner-city area of Detroit. And we're not going to open the phones yet, but when we do, you know what I think I'm going to do? I'm going to restrict my East of the Rockies line to the inner city area of Detroit. That might be very interesting. So if that's where you are, when we open the lines, everybody else hold off. And on our East of the Rockies line, I want to hear from nobody but inner city Detroit people. Hello there. We're talking to you. The number is 1-800-825-5033. That's 1-800-825-5033. A spark. Something in Emmanuel that lifted him up by bootstraps. That's something, well-worn phrase, I suppose, and made him decide, I'm out of here. I'm into a different life. I'm going to educate myself. Up, up, and out, as it were. We're going to explore that and some other very interesting race-related issues with Emmanuel. There's a lot of interesting stuff coming up. In the most immediate, reparations. We'll talk about that and his attitude about them compared to Minister Farrakhan's, for example.
Now, we take you back to the past on Art Bell Somewhere in Time.
Back now to Emmanuel McLittle, who publishes, editor-in-chief, in fact, of Destiny Magazine.
Yes.
What is the message of Destiny?
The message of Destiny is that it actually provided a little relief for me in the beginning of my sort of journey to what I believed to be was a sort of a reality that I discovered later on had been talking to me inside my head since the day I decided that the Bonneville had to go and that there was no other money for which me to escape where I was, the place that I was.
I mean, Emmanuel, is this your way of trying to tell other people how to do what you did?
How to do what I did, and that choices, the choices that we make as individuals, are not a whole lot different than the choices that we make as a whole group, a whole race of people. When you choose wrong, the results will be wrong, and that we have, for too long, chosen out of a sense of anger about slavery and have therefore gone into a direction that has created an environment in our neighborhoods, in our household, that is all wrong. And this wrong is reflected in everything, nearly everything that we read, nearly everything that we listen to, nearly everything that we are attracted to in terms of music, in terms of the culture that surrounds the minds of our children.
A lot of talk about reparations, Emmanuel. Should there be reparations for black people?
No.
No?
No, there shouldn't be reparations for black people, because if there should be reparations for black people, then what money is there going to be left to pay for the slavery that took place in the continent where we came from? Who pays that reparations? And who pays the reparations of all of the other races that have been slaves in the world before us? And if you pay reparations, how do you factor in the fact that black Americans live at a much higher level than other blacks anywhere else in the world?
That's an absolute truth. I heard a black man, and I'm sorry I don't remember where, the other day, said, you know, sometimes I hear blacks talking about Africa as though they would wish to go back. He said, let me tell you something. I went over to Africa here recently, and he said, I looked at the people and how they lived, the way they lived, the sounds that were around me. He said, I couldn't get my butt out of there fast enough. There's no more way I'd want to live in Africa than the man in the moon.
And nor the world of those people who are constantly hurling attacks at America as being a racist, the most racist place on the planet. You don't see those people taking advantage of Pan Am's discounts that will take you overseas every weekend. And one of the things that Destiny Magazine attempts to do is to provide a language and a basis for understanding that if you bite the hand that gives you the best, the biggest, the tastiest meal you've ever had, then you are responsible for your own negative lot. And this is what's happened to blacks in this country on a political, social, and a personal level. We have bitten the hand of the nation that allows us to have blacks heading some of the largest cities in this nation,
mm-hmm.
and that we amongst some of the wealthiest, and there would hardly be any basketball were it not for blacks, and we are police chiefs and school board presidents and teachers and physicists and scientists in numbers in America that is unmatched anywhere else.
I'll bet there's some blacks out there who would say to you, now here he is, I'm listening to this guy, he's a black guy who ran away to be a white man, you know, wanted to live on the Ponderosa.
Yes, but not wanted to, do live on a small Ponderosa. I have experience.
Yeah, but you don't understand. They'd be coming at you from that place of anger. They'd be saying, well, he's a black man, maybe only in skin color only. He's a white man now,
but
in his head.
But if I would allow that kind of criticism to put a boulder in the road of my dreams, I would be back there with them, slapping backs and playing gin rummy. But I'm not, you see. And I say it out of no anger and malice whatsoever.
You're not in favor of mixed marriage, are you?
No, I'm not.
So obviously then you're a connoisseur of your own culture.
Yes, I am.
And yet, many would argue that you have abandoned your culture with the destiny you have created for yourself. Isn't there a bit of a problem between those two sometimes for you?
No, I'm married to a very, very attractive black woman.
Uh-huh.
And culture has no real great value for me. I have created my own culture. And while I am still a black man, I allow nothing to hem me in terms of how I shall act, what I shall wear,
mm-hmm.
who I should be, where I should go. I'm a free individual. And I'm suggesting in 60 pages every other month how not only can my brethren, my personal, my family, my racial brethren, my colleagues, the people that I left back in Detroit, how this can be shared and experienced, and that as long as we think of ourselves as a group and not as individuals who happen to be a different color, then we will continue to live in a prison and continue to blame white folks for that prison.
Well, all right, but what's wrong with the mixed marriage?
I don't think anything is wrong with a mixed marriage for blacks in a perfect world. But for blacks, in my view, and I understand this from a sort of like my psychology background, where I worked with my people for many, many years, 12 years. And you'd have to be blind and a fool to not see that rather than racism, there are some deep pathological problems inside the black community that emanate not in corporate America, but within the confines of the homes where young black men and women grow up.
Mm-hmm.
And that there is such emotional destruction that that is really the genesis for some of the crime, really the genesis for some of the violence that we see in 20% of the young men who are in prison now. And there is a need for some extensive repair. And the repair must include a father and a mother. Usually, it would be much more healthy for young black children to see their mother and their father work through their own destinies and work through a life that is transcendent of hostility and hate and anger and failure. And I believe that in order to do so, that has to include both members of what it takes to be a family, a black man and a black woman. This is not anti-white. This is not interracial marriage. It is pro the kind of building blocks that's needed to create an organism, a race of health.
I think I disagree with you. I think that ultimately in our society, the only hope is that the color differences eventually disappear. And actually that is occurring, and you probably consider that to be
pathological.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's
interesting. And I also consider it quite arrogant for human beings who did not create the color differences, which I believe to be rather beautiful from a panoramic point of view.
Actually, I do too.
And we would be quite arrogant to attempt to get rid of them.
Wouldn't we also be arrogant to prevent that change? In other words, as it occurs naturally, whether it's black and brown or Asian or white or whatever, intermarrying.
I don't believe it's occurring naturally. I believe it's forced on us. It's being pushed on us. It is just now happening in the last 40 years that we have crossed each other's lines. And don't get the impression that I am advocating that we don't deal with each other in different races. I think it's quite possible for you and I to work in the same marketplace, that we do business together, that we be great friends, and that we sit and have and break bread together. But it is my view that I should not mix with your wife, and that you should not mix with my sister, that if you carry that mixing to its ultimate conclusion, then the races do disappear.
Yeah.
And it would be an odd thing for it to happen for human beings as well as for it to happen to trees and, or animals. This great variety that exists in everything else on Earth ought to exist in the human race as well. And I am suspicious and have been suspicious for 20 years about this ongoing effort to get rid of it.
But,
there's something wrong with
it. But what is to say that a black man and white woman or the other way around or any other combination of colors and ethnicities can't mix and have as nurturing and loving a family?
I'm not saying that that is not that's possible, but in the world that we live in,
if you could, you would prevent it, though.
If I think that there is something natural that prevents it. I think it's very difficult to exist in a mixed marriage. I think that the basis of all real love is directed towards yourself.
Emmanuel, that's a societal difference. It's not a natural one. You used the word natural a while ago.
I am naturally different in terms of my skin tone than you are.
So what?
What do you mean, so what?
I say again, so what?
I think it's a wonderful thing to have that difference.
Well, it is wonderful.
There ought not to be any difference.
I don't disagree with you. It is a wonderful thing. But again, I say, so what? I mean, if a man and a woman fall in love, regardless of anything, and they provide a nurturing home, I don't see where the problem with that is, and you need to explain it to me.
On an individual level, if people are able to come together and have that coming together not be reflected in the fact that they are different colors, there is nothing wrong with it. But you name me a couple.
In the unit, there is nothing wrong with it.
You name me a couple who makes the decision to marry each other, and they are of different races. And I say that if it's possible to strip away the psychological layers, that you will find the fact of that difference having too much of a factor in the decision to marry. It's not possible.
Well,
black man cannot ignore his wife's complexion if she's white.
Yeah, okay. Let's leave that for a second and talk about, it was toward the end of the O.J. Simpson trial, you know, when they had the famous race is the reason speech at the end by Cochran. And I talked to, for a couple of hours, black men down in Los Angeles. Then I talked to black women in Los Angeles.
Yes.
And I made a very important discovery. I discovered there was an extreme anger on the part of black women toward any black man who, after having made it financially, you know, moving on up, as it were, took on a white woman or a woman of another color. There's an incredible anger.
Yes, because to black women, it represents abandonment. If that man, and I disagree with you, they see it with poor black men who mix. They hate it. They hate it with a passion, because that is one more man that wasn't at home providing a model for his son. That is one more man that one of them could not marry. And they see something naturally wrong with their kind going to a different kind. It is the ultimate to a black female in rejection. It is the ultimate rejection. And you must talk to a black female who speaks with you from a point of honesty, who will tell you that one of the reasons that O.J. Simpson is free today is because there was a resentment towards his wife that nobody ever spoke of. It was denied.
Now, you think that was a big part of the decision?
A huge factor. Yeah. In other words, she should have never been with him. And nobody knows how O.J. Simpson and his wife got together. But the story is, she chased him. She demanded to have him. She took him away from his beautiful black mm-hmm. wife and family.
Mm-hmm.
You see? And this is the kind of thing that you cannot get an individual to speak about in an honest sense.
Well, I would say, okay, but that happens in the white community. I mean, a lot of wives out there who have had their husbands taken away by members of the same sex.
Not a lot.
The same race.
Yes.
Oh, sure there are. Come on. The divorce rate in white America is terrible. It's probably worse in black America, but it's bad in white America, too.
Yes.
People leave people for other people all the
yes.
time.
Yes.
But in the case of leaving, as you point out, a black woman for a white woman, as he made it, you know, financially, boy, oh boy, I took calls, and I'm telling you, there was some serious anger.
Yes. Yes.
So,
because it was that bread, honey, and sweet milk that he should have brought home to his community. It was the departure of the time that men and women should transcend the first blush of marriage, which is usually quite sexual. And that transcends itself 7 or 8 or 10 years, depending on the couple.
Yes.
And you get down to where the rubber meets the road in terms of trying to work out the things that divide men and women.
I'll bite. I agree with that. But why would a black-white relationship not mature after this initial sexual rush as any other relationship in the same race would or hopefully...
I can only tell you what my experience is, having counseled many such couples. They're in denial about the real reasons that they marry.
When you counsel them, do you counsel them that they should not be together because they are of different race?
Well, in the 12 years that I did practice, I didn't get into a habit of saying you should do or you should not do. I got a good therapist, and I sense them don't believe in the powers of psychology anymore. But a good therapist would simply show them the reality that they are trying to avoid in their own minds. And they will eventually tell you themselves that they shouldn't have done it. I've heard it 1,000 times that the reason that we all get married in the same race is too often trivial and fickle and do not have enough of the deeper things that life is made out of.
Emmanuel.
Of 15 years.
Emmanuel, Emmanuel, I've got to interrupt. We're at the top of the hour. Stand by. We'll be right back to you.
You're listening to Art Bell Somewhere in Time. Tonight's broadcast of Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell was recorded on December 20th, 1995. Networks present Art Bell Somewhere in Time. Tonight's program originally aired December 20th, 1995.
Well, I'll tell you what, it's going to be an interesting one this morning. My guest is Emmanuel McLittle. He is the founder, publisher, editor-in-chief of Destiny Magazine. He grew up in Detroit's inner city. Young, angry, black kid. Suddenly, somehow, the light bulb went on. He went and got an education. went out west, and now publishes a magazine with some very interesting points of view. And we'll be right back to him.
Looking for the truth? You'll find it on Coast to Coast AM.
Let's talk a little bit about the shadow government. Do you believe it's there?
Yeah, we've heard that term, you know, for so many years, and I thought it was this group in the Netherlands that sit behind smoked windows and make decisions like, you know, giant players of chess. But it isn't. We don't have the government anymore. What we have is a loose coalition of bureaucracies. But we have no representation in that government. So when I look at the Constitution, I see it as a really inspired and eternal document that has been sidestepped in almost every legal way possible. So the process itself has been intentionally manipulated to facilitate a certain style of government. And it's taken a while to set up, but I think it's set up now and it's working just the way they like it. We need a systemic change in order to let the Republic be representative of the people again.
You're listening to Art Bell Somewhere in Time. Tonight's broadcast of Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell was recorded on December 20th, 1995.
All right, back now to Emmanuel McLittle. Emmanuel, I want to specify, I'm going to restrict my East of the Rockies line. Emmanuel's birthplace, inner city Detroit, and we're about to take calls here. So inner city Detroit only. The number is 1-800-825-5033. This will be very interesting. All the other lines as usual, but inner city Detroit only on the East of the Rockies line at 1-800-825-5033. Now, Emmanuel McLittle, he doesn't want a country where there are mixed marriages. He's against them. Blacks should not marry whites, whites not blacks, and so forth. He says he doesn't want reparations for blacks. Now, I'm beginning to hear a few similarities with what he's saying and what Louis Farrakhan says. Louis Farrakhan is many things, but he is an intellectual. He is interesting to listen to, and I'd love to interview him. So in some ways, it's not like I'm interviewing Farrakhan here, but I do want to ask. Farrakhan says, if black people were given reparations, Emmanuel, in the form of money, that money would soon and quickly disappear non-productively. What Farrakhan wants is in a way what I'm going to ask you whether you want, and that is he wants land in America. He wants a place where black people in America can be by themselves. How do you react to that?
I don't. I see myself at the total opposite end of the universe of Farrakhan's thinking. I think we have all that we need in this country, and it is called not land, not money, but opportunity. I think that living in the most prosperous place on the planet, having an opportunity to do whatever, live wherever, be whatever we want to be, is the great prize that all of the other groups in the world want, and they're streaming across a part of our border to try to experience it. We already have it. And I believe that American blacks are the recipients of a great gift. Let me shock you a little bit more in my thinking that those slave ships that landed on the shores of parts of the African continent, in my view, while it was a harsh experience, it was a harsh ride, it was a harsh 100 to 200 years of slavery, but had it not occurred, the blacks that you see having been lifted up by a tremendous tide would never have taken place. And so if you are bothered at all about some of the things that I have said in the past, be bothered by this also that I'm grateful to the powers that be that saw fit to put my ancestors on one of those boats, because I am an individual here. I am all that I am inside, and that goes so far beyond what color my skin is, that I am a man that has virtually no consciousness that I'm even black.
Well, I'm sure there are a lot of blacks that will call you up and say they can hear that clearly.
Well, I haven't heard it yet from blacks. What I am hearing it is from Art Bell.
Yep. In other words,
isn't it strange, Art Bell, that you, an intelligent man, would hurl questions at me about why Emmanuel McLittle lives on a ranch in a remote small town, and he's black, but that is supposed to be an automatic right for a man like yourself to live probably in a remote area in a desert town.
I do.
And away from all of those white people in California.
I do.
Well, then how come I can't have it?
You misinterpreted what I've said.
I don't think so.
Yes, you have. I'm not saying that there's a thing wrong with what you've done. In fact, as I told you earlier, I used to drive through the Bronx, and my attitude would be when I'd see those tenements, you know, that run alongside the railroad, you go through those areas. So why the hell don't those people get out of there?
But if you were speaking as you have to white guests who live in remote areas, the question would never have formed in your mind.
No, that's not what I'm questioning about what you're saying, Emmanuel. What I'm questioning about what...
Help me understand it.
Okay. What I have questioned is your attitude about mixed marriages.
I don't care for them.
Yeah, I know.
Why are you offended by
them? In other words, I don't care whether you live in Timbuktu or in Detroit. That makes no difference to me. So you've missed that there. I'm glad that you live where you live, and I'm glad you're happy living there.
Not as glad as me.
I do question your attitude about mixed marriages, and that's where we have our difference. Now, you say you have a lot of differences with Farrakhan. I don't see that you have that many differences.
Well, because you seem to look at surface.
Okay, Farrakhan.
You seem to look at surface, and you hear some of the things coming from me, that you hear similar things coming from Louis Farrakhan.
Yes.
And you don't see anything except we're the same color and we sound similar. You don't seem to hear that it's two diametrically opposed hearts, minds, and souls, which you don't seem to attribute.
Okay, does Louis Farrakhan also believe that
I have no idea what's inside of his mind.
Well,
I'm
sure you've heard him speak.
Yes.
Do you think he also believes that the races should not mix in marriage?
Well, he may also be capable of telling you when it's noon on a particular day. And because he's capable of saying something intelligent doesn't make him a good man.
That's right.
There are many, many intelligent people who see quite clearly that it is healthy for black children to have parents who look like them. There's something wrong when men of this and women of the same race take years to ferret through some of the physical things that impede men from loving women's soul. It is compounded when the races are also different, because I tell you quite honestly, from having sat in the room with hundreds of couples, mixed couples generally are extremely more sexual, and there is a lot of psychological sex embodied in the decision to interracially marry. And sex is already a problem between men and women, because as fast as he can, a man has to learn for himself, for his wife, and for his children to learn to love his wife's soul and not her body. And any honest woman will tell you that.
No, I agree with you. I'm just saying, and I'll repeat what I said last hour, and then we'll get to phones, because a lot of people want to talk to you. But we both realize that most marriages begin with a mainly sexual or passionate attraction.
Yes.
Then after months or years pass, One of two things happens. Either they find their differences are irreconcilable and the original sexual attraction is gone, or they fall in a deeper, more mature love and understanding of each other.
Wrong again.
No, wait. Well, let me finish, Manuel. And I think that is true. The sex remains always to some degree, but they either become soulmates, as it were, and that takes over and continues the bond, or they get to the point where they are very different. And to me, that could happen either in a mixed marriage or in a same-race marriage.
What you call irreconcilable differences is usually men who are not ready to realize that the reasons that he decided to marry this particular woman was in frequently too many of the wrong reasons, and she was looking for love in the wrong place and discovered earlier than him
mm-hmm.
that this wasn't it. And love is absent. So irreconcilable difference is a shallow way of describing what really takes place in the conflict between men and women. She wants genuine love.
Yeah, well, sure. But look, I'm trying to get through all of this fog is that these things that go right or go wrong can happen in a mixed marriage or a same-race marriage.
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
Quicker in mixed marriages. Quicker in mixed marriages. Check the statistics. They don't last long.
Well, that's an interesting point. We'll continue with it. Let me jump to the telephones. On my Detroit line, you're on the air with Emmanuel McLittle. Hello.
Hello. How are you, Mr. McLittle?
Hello, sir. How are you?
Pretty good. Pretty good.
Where do you live? Where do you live?
I live in Detroit. I live on Carter near Dexter.
I know where you are.
Yep. I grew up and was born and raised on Sewer and Bangor and Hancock, all throughout Detroit.
Yes.
Actually, I grew up quite like yourself.
Yes.
A family of 10. Father was self-employed. We grew up actually in the Nation of Islam.
Yes.
We grew up with this influence. And as I grew and I went to college in North Carolina, I realized that this Nation of Islam was not representative of Islam.
Yes.
I started taking the course that Malcolm took. I understood Malcolm as being similar to me. He grew up in the streets. He was a hustler. He was a gangster. The whole ghetto subculture, what you see today.
Yes.
Then he transcended to a nationalistic view, quite like yourself. Even though
yes.
you're very educated, you still aspire to these nationalistic views. And as I researched and studied more and found out what Islam had to offer, I started to look at situations surrounding race. And in the Quran, it says, God created man in the different nations and colors and tribes so that they may come to know one another, not so that they may despise one another.
This God who loves beautiful color.
Okay, but hear me what I'm saying. Okay, America, in its attempt with man governing man, in its attempt, identifies people based on color identification.
Yes.
So they have taught us well on how to take on these biases and understand me well. I don't subscribe to any tenets of racism. I know Muslim men and women, black, white, Somalian, Korean, who are Muslim, and they live in harmony, they raise their children in harmony, simply because they follow a specific type of belief system. Now, this is what divides mankind,
yes.
their beliefs. So you still, even though you're educated and well-educated, have you, you still subscribe to this belief system that America teaches all of us, which is secularism or this understanding. And you look at the life choices that you made. I've heard this program. You took a program off of television as a youngster, and it inspired you to sort of run away from your environment. When I understand that no matter where you live, it doesn't matter where you are, it's how you live.
You know,
how
you live.
My mother always taught
me that. Let me beg to differ with you. I believe that human beings are quite unlike animals.
Oh, yes.
A notion that we
spiritual
have
spiritual as well as physical.
Let me finish. We are quite unlike animals, and therefore, we have what I believe to be a deeper, intuitive soul side to us.
Spirituality
that has no has no territory, for an example.
Oh, yes, it does. I'm
expressing something in where I live, and it's interesting that where I live has become a flashpoint here.
Have you ever been out of the
country? I express something in where I live that is quite individualistic.
Have you ever been out of the country, somewhere like Morocco or India?
No.
Even Mecca or Medina?
No.
You've never been out of the country?
Not to those countries, no.
Okay. So my point is this. No matter where you live or no matter where you run, you still have ideologies that influence us. You've been influenced by the Western mentality and the Western ideology to make you hold these views.
And I tell you that there is a greater and a stronger influence in me that comes from what I believe to be my individual design.
Okay, but even though you're individual, you cannot function properly as an individual because human beings are community-oriented.
That's
you
right.
You need each other. If a flood were to inflict you, you would eventually have to have another human being, whether they're white, black, brown, purple,
yeah.
It doesn't matter. So what I'm saying is if you believe in one creator who created us all,
yes.
You have to believe that human beings are also one. Even though the difference is there, you say that you enjoy these differences and they're needed. But they're also one. They all have a heart. They all have a soul. They all need bread, water. They all use the bathroom. This is what joins human beings, the universality that I found in Islam. You look at the Hajj in Mecca each year. You'll find every human being representative there with the same aspirations, the worship of one God, and they're all brothers.
Yes.
This is why Islam breaks down this barrier. I know Muslims who are married to Caucasian Muslim women. I know Muslims who are across the spectrum. No matter where you go in the world, you'll find Islam there.
Yeah, let me jump in just one second. Doesn't spirituality, as both of you have discussed it, if it is pure, why does it not simply transcend any skin color differences?
Because of what God instructs us. He says when he created man, he said he created man in the best of mold, and that when he created this man, that the devil was present. And the devil said that I see in this human being there's very little self-control. So the devil inspires us to create differences among ourselves. I'm from better lineage than you. I am better than you because of my race. And this is what but human beings don't have the ability to govern themselves. We don't. This is why God sent prophets to teach them our universal message, because ultimately the final goal is to die and meet God.
I don't know anything about all of that.
A wise man once said,
I think that it is quite natural for me to identify, love, and want to procreate.
But you're not operating on a natural ability. You're operating on what you've learned behavior.
And if you want to go back
to something natural, seek what prophets had. Seek what Moses taught, and you ain't going to be able to find it unless you look at the Quran, and you'll find human beings have not changed since the time of Adam, since the time of Noah.
Well, we definitely disagree on where we ought to look for truth, but you are from my old country, and I'm happy to talk to you, and I think that I'd like to get to some of my enemies that Outwell is looking for in Detroit.
Who are your enemies?
No, you're wrong.
Enemies.
I'm not.
We disagree.
Yeah.
We're not enemies.
That's right.
I don't see you as one.
I don't see you as one.
You did contradict yourself,
Mr. McLittle. You said human beings, because you yourself said that you don't look to yourself as a race, and you use your intellect and the ability that you have as an individual. But
yes.
At the same time, you say that in mixed marriages, it won't work. How can we say that? How can we make a blanket statement like that if two individuals really care about each other and they love each other? Because you have to look at behavior also.
All right.
This is why I agree with you about going back to family, marriage,
sure.
And solving some of the problems that we face in society.
All right. Listen, you two. Hold it. We're out of time. Caller. Caller in Detroit, thank you very much. So in essence, he was complaining to you about what I was complaining to you about. I'm not disagreeing with you entirely, but on this one issue I am, and I think it's going to be interesting, Emmanuel. So hold on. We'll be back with more. Stay right where you are. My guest is Emmanuel McLittle. He is the editor-in-chief of Destiny Magazine from his home in Oregon. And there's more on the way. I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM.
You're listening to Art Bell Somewhere in Time. Tonight's broadcast of Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell was recorded on December 20th, 1995. Somewhere in Time on Premier Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from December 20th, 1995.
It's going to be an interesting ride this morning. Emmanuel McLittle is my guest, founder, publisher, editor-in-chief of Destiny magazine, and that kind of says it. He came from center Detroit, lives in Oregon now, and has many views that are very controversial, and so it's going to be very interesting. I am holding open my East of the Rockies line for people in inner city Detroit. It should provide, I think, an interesting contrast. I'm not looking for enemies at all, despite what Emmanuel may think of his. I'm simply looking for people who would comment from that area which he came.
Take Coast to Coast AM with you anywhere on your mobile phone. CoastToCoastAM.com can be conveniently accessed on your iPhone and most Android platforms, which means that you are never without your Coast to Coast AM fix. If you're a Coast to Coast Insider subscriber, you can listen to the show live in the middle of the night or previous shows 24/7. Plus, you can browse all the great photos, videos, and news stories. Keeping up with Coast to Coast AM has never been easier with our Coast Insider service.
Looking for the truth? You'll find it on Coast to Coast AM.
I get asked at so many places, do you really believe that we're being visited? It's amazing how many people wonder about that. The visitations have been happening since the beginning of time, haven't they?
It is a very bizarre thing that is taking place. Look, we're having alien creatures visit this planet. Our government knows about it. They're telling us nothing about it. That is a very serious situation.
Now, we take you back to the past on Art Bell Somewhere in Time.
Back now to Emmanuel McLittle. Emmanuel, I've got two faxes here I want to read you. One is sympathetic to you and one is not. Which one do you want first?
I get a thrill out of agreement and disagreement, so it doesn't matter to me.
Well, in that case, you're going to be thrilled to death. Here they come. All right, dear Art, thank you for your guest tonight. His rational thinking and intelligent choices give me, as a white person, hope that all races may in the future see that we are not different in what we as human beings need in the form of acceptance, love, and belongingness. At some point, no matter if you're black, white, or red, you need to give up being a professional victim, which your guest has definitely accomplished. I'd be fortunate to rub shoulders with such a person. I'd also like to thank your guest for helping me to not feel cheated for being culturalist in America, and say thanks again, Art. Your diversity never ceases to amaze me. That is from Hawaii. From Gary, the following comment. Your guest is so far off that it is pathetic. Emmanuel has made the assumption that race is synonymous with culture. This view is horribly defective. I am a Bavarian American, my girlfriend, African American. We march through life in step. In fact, she's listening to the show tonight, laughing at your guest. I would ask your guest to demonstrate that Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas is of the same culture as Snoopy Dog Dog, or show me how Thomas Sowell and Walter Williams are in any way related to people such as Rodney King. Or on the flip side, show me how I am of the same culture as Charles Manson or Ted Bundy or hillbillies in Appalachia. What's destroying minorities in general in America is their culture, not their race. And then he dares me to read it on the air. You want to comment?
No.
No?
Sounds like he's nuts. I never insinuated that color was a problem. He is confusing something that he might have heard me say earlier, but it isn't worthy of comment. And Bavarian married to African, I don't know what that means. And if it didn't make very much difference, the fact that they are different kinds of people, I'd like to ask that the individual that wrote that fax why it would even enter his mind to explain that they were different.
Okay. Let's go to our West of the Rockies line. You're on the air with Emmanuel McLittle. Hello.
Hello. How are you doing?
Hi. Where are you?
I'm in Los Angeles.
Yes, sir.
And I've lived about half my life in Los Angeles, half in Detroit. I'm from Detroit. And I'm 54 years old. And by the way, how old is Emmanuel?
47.
47.
Oh, okay. Good. I understand. Emmanuel, I Detroit being 80% black and having lived in Detroit, you can vary the numbers. I don't know how much your estimate is of the black population there. But it was almost one thought a town. And in my estimation, it became almost backwards after the 60s, you know.
Self-destructed.
Yes. And, yep. had you any idea that you were going to somehow break out of the mold or get away from Detroit in a way which allowed yourself to be free thinking? It was almost impossible to do it there. So I can understand where you come from by going to Oregon, you know.
Well, I didn't come to Oregon right away. I have gradually moved I wasn't leaving blacks. I was leaving pathology that I observed from my front porch.
Mm-hmm.
The crime, the hell, the stealing, the kinds of things that no individual, regardless of color, wants to live around. And let me tell you, one of the most threatening things, it seems to me, one of the most threatening things, especially to white liberals, is a black who's free thinking.
That's right.
Who thinks for himself.
That's right.
If you think for one second that Clarence Thomas, who, while I love him, he's a good friend of mine, I would not have intermarried, but his own personal business, I love him no less because he did.
Yes.
But if you think for one second that his free thinking didn't scare the hell out of American liberals who had for years guided blacks in their thinking, guided them towards the failure and the hostility that we champion in nearly every program that you see on TV for blacks, and yet they don't champion it for their own kids. And I say to you that I am used to, for 12 or 15 years now, whites who look at me and say, how dare you separate from your people? How dare you think for yourself and be as you want to be and find appreciation in a white program like Bonanza, as though it were not possible for there to be values there, you see?
Well, this is what happened to me, and I'm fine. I've been calling shows for years talking about the fact that
You don't sound much like this contrast that Art's looking for.
Contrast?
Yes.
No, Emmanuel, stop it. I'm not looking for anything in particular.
You were looking for contrast.
Here's a contrast for you. I used to be black.
You're making too many assumptions, Emmanuel, about
people. I'm
listening
to your words. You said that word, contrast. That's not an assumption. You said it.
I don't recall saying contrast. I think I said that I was looking for people in the area that you came from. I think that's what I said.
Well, I want to introduce you to millions and millions of black Americans who have transcended that thinking, who read my magazine, who call and write my office on a daily basis.
Well, all right, let's try this. Are you concerned about hearing from people from Detroit, and if so, why?
I'm concerned about your seeking for it.
Why?
I'm concerned...
Why?
You,
why? Why?
If
they, look, Emmanuel, if destiny, Emmanuel, hold it. Yeah, hold it. If, Emmanuel, hold it a second. Hold it a second. If Destiny Magazine is to reach out and to teach people what you say you have learned, then it is exactly those people that you would want to be reaching, isn't it?
But we haven't talked about Destiny Magazine. We've talked about...
Well, but that, yes, we have.
We strangely have talked about interracial marriages.
Well, we have, but we...
Nearly half of the program.
You know, but Destiny, my program is not half over. It's 5 hours, for your information.
Yeah.
Okay, so now, Destiny Magazine, I take it, and I did ask you this earlier, is it not a way, don't you recall my asking, is Destiny not your way of reaching out to talk to the people... That are in the situation you were in, and in effect tell them how you did it?
No, it's basically an alternative to what exists in the black press. It is, it points the direction to a reality that is not prevalently spoken about, talked about, sung about in our community.
Yeah.
It is a different way of looking at the issues.
Emmanuel's way.
And that's all it is.
Emmanuel's way.
Yes, Emmanuel's way, Clarence Thomas's way, Thomas Sowell's way, Walter Williams' way, and many, many millions of black Americans who we can't name.
All right. When you said free thinker a while ago.
Yes, free thinker.
Free thinker.
Unashamed of it.
Does free thinker mean or translate to conservative politically?
On some things. Free is free. It's a very simple word.
Free.
I think the way I want to think. My thinking isn't governed by what somebody else thinks.
Yeah.
I don't think in according to somebody else's approval. I do not mind challenges at all to my thinking. I am extremely secure in it.
Well, it's just that it sounded like an acronym in your case for conservative. And the people that
you
name...
You reached that conclusion in your own head.
Only based on the people that you named.
What did I say was conservative?
Well, you named...
Thomas Sowell is an economist, a brilliant economist.
Okay.
Walter Williams is a brilliant professor at George Mason University.
Okay.
Clarence Thomas is a Supreme Court justice, quite adept at the law and the Constitution.
And quite conservative politically,
arguably.
Well,
I don't know what you call him. I see him as brilliant.
Okay. Well, there can be free thinkers. I'm a conservative, politically. But there can be free thinkers on both sides, I believe, in both ideologies, and extremes in both ideologies.
You consider yourself conservative? You have problems with blacks who don't live in the ghetto.
I do? No. That, when did I say that?
You appear to.
When? I'll even requalify that. What did I say that led you to believe that?
Well, what I've been hearing is challenges to the decisions that I've made and the seeking for contrast. And I say to you that you're going to be shocked.
Well, Emmanuel, if you would like me to seek out and find people who just agree with you, I can do that.
No.
We can open the lines and say, only people.
I would have never restricted the line from the east to people in Detroit alone.
Well, that, but you see.
It's full of people.
You see, though, I'm running the show.
Well, you're the one looking. I'm not looking.
You're absolutely right. I'm running the show, and so I'm seeking people from Detroit,
but
not for what you call contrast, but I thought, rather, to let you talk with the people from the exact same area that you came from.
For what reason?
So that, for the, what I presume to be the same reason that you publish Destiny Magazine.
Which is in every state of the union.
Well, that's fine. That's fine.
Look,
this is your bio. You sent it to me.
Yes.
You're the one who spent a lot of time talking about Detroit. And the time you spent in Detroit, and how you got out of there, and why you went out of there, and we talked about the first hour.
Been gone from there for 25 years. I wouldn't know how to get around in it now.
No?
No. You're fixated to it.
No, I'm not. And let us go to that line. You're on the air with Emmanuel McLittle. Hello.
I have a question for Emmanuel.
All right, where are you, sir?
Call the wild card lines, area 702-727-1295.
We'll just, that was just a stupid waste of time, Emmanuel. On the first time caller line, you're on the air with Emmanuel McLittle.
Hello, Mr. McLittle.
Hello,
let me turn my radio down here.
All right, where are you, by the way?
I'm just outside of Portland, Oregon, in Vancouver, Washington.
Yeah, you two are close.
How are you, sir?
Beautiful country up there, isn't it?
It's gorgeous.
Yes.
I'm sorry I didn't hear what part of Oregon you were in, but the whole state is beautiful. So
near the Grants Pass, Medford area.
Uh-huh, southern. Yes.
Yes.
Yes, it's beautiful down there.
Yes, it is.
I have a question, sir. I respect everything you've done, and I commend you for making something of yourself. My question is, I am involved in an interracial marriage. My husband is 45. I'm 37 and Caucasian.
Yeah.
It is our second marriage. I was 25 when we were married. I was pregnant at the time. We had been seeing each other a couple of years. And I find, what you're saying about the naturalness of non-interracial marriages, I don't get the naturalness of it.
Well, you see, I don't want to get too psychological and talk to you about your personal relationship.
Well, I'm just saying...
That's a decision that you made that I wouldn't make. That's all I have to say about that. I wouldn't do that. But there is sometimes... there are conflicts with people of the same race that should not be ran from, should be dealt with. There even ought to be a struggle not to leave. That there is something to learn about each individual during this struggle. And the tendency to run away from it is a dead giveaway that there is something about yourself, not your mate, that you don't want to see. And if life isn't about seeing and developing as a result of progressively more seeing, then it isn't anything. So the reason that I wouldn't do it is because I think that marriage is the second opportunity for us to deal with parents, peers, all over again from a mature point of view.
All right, Emmanuel.
We handled it all right when we were 8, but there was another chance to do it when we were 25 or 26.
All right, Emmanuel.
No, I
Ma'am, hold on just one second. Emmanuel, to be fair... You said you've kind of gone from you are against the whole concept.
Yes, I am.
Okay.
I think it's dishonest.
In other words, you were getting down to where you were saying...
it's dishonest.
Well, you were saying on an individual basis, you know, that's their choice. But I wanted to make it clear, again, that you did say that you were against the entire concept.
I'll say it again.
Okay.
Right.
Okay, fair enough, man.
Right.
Go ahead.
You lady, if I live next door to you, and
yes,
we were friends,
oh, I'm sure we could be.
Would not change because you married outside your race.
Right. No.
It's something
but
that
I understand.
Wouldn't
do, but don't
all.
You feel? Let me tell you that I have an 18-year-old son who is black, a 17-year-old daughter who is white, and we have a 12-year-old who is a little bit of everything.
Yes.
And you know, marriage at its best is work. And I think that's true regardless of races involved. What I would like to say is that our marriage has brought a tremendous amount of diversity into my life and to my husband's life, and it has genuinely strengthened our marriage, the work we've had to do around people's personal opinions, and you know how we've dealt with that on an individual and together. You know, our marriage has worked for going on 13 years now,
yeah.
and it's strengthened it. And the diversity that he's brought into my life, I am very, very thankful for.
Yeah.
And had I married a man of my own race, I wouldn't have that in my life.
All right, ma'am. Thank you.
Let me just say one other thing. Had you married a man of your own race, you may have been forced to deal with unresolved conflicts with your dad.
Oh, well, okay. I disagree with you, sir. And I find a tremendous amount of personal paranoia around some of the things. I mean, I hear a tremendous amount of paranoia in some of your responses. And I was just questioning that. Thank you, Art. I appreciate you allowing me the time.
The best of luck to you, lady.
Thank you, sir. Thank
All right.
You. You're welcome.
So there are differences, and to some degree, Emmanuel, I find you also overreactive to some of this. You know, overreactive to some of it.
How so? How overreactive? I simply see what I see, and I say what I see.
And that's fine.
And I'm not a nice guy. I say what I see. I'm a real free thinker. I hope to make friends without Bell. But I'm going to say exactly what I see coming out of Art Bell.
Well, then,
just as I would the guy that I stand in back of in the grocery store, I'd probably be a little more friendly.
All right, well, Emmanuel,
I detect something not right here.
Emmanuel, we've got a break. It's the top of the hour. We have no choice on that one. It's the clock coming, and it's relentless, so we'll be right back.
The trip back in time continues with Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM. More Somewhere in Time coming up. Listening to Art Bell Somewhere in Time. Tonight's broadcast of Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell was recorded on December 20th, 1995.
My guest, Emmanuel McLittle, publisher, editor of Destiny Magazine, grew up in Detroit, lives now in Oregon, does not believe in mixed marriages, thinks there's something inherently wrong with them, does not want reparations, money, nor land for blacks, describes himself as a free thinker, and it has produced quite a conversation, and it's going to continue in just a moment.
Coast to Coast AM sure sounds great in the middle of the night. But you know, you don't have to be nocturnal to enjoy this amazing show. The Coast Insider is your key to a normal life. For 15 cents a day, you can wake up refreshed knowing that last night's show is waiting for you with podcasting. Listen on your way to work and again on the way home. Or listen to one of over 1,000 archive shows from the past 3 years. As a member, you'll have access to our monthly live chat sessions with George Noory and special guests. The Coast Insiders Club is a must-have feature for all Coast to Coast AM listeners. Visit coasttocoastam.com to sign up today. You'll sleep like a baby, knowing you'll never miss your favorite guests and topics ever again. Remember, a one-year subscription comes out to only 15 cents a day. Sign up today at coasttocoastam.com. Somewhere in Time with Art Bell continues, courtesy of Premier Networks.
Back now to Emmanuel McLittle. Emmanuel, welcome back.
Thank you.
Let's try a different tact here. Move away from the mixed marriages for a second and move toward our educational system, okay?
Yes.
In America, we had segregated schools for the most part in our early years. Then Martin Luther King and so forth, marches, change, laws, equal rights amendments, et cetera, et cetera, to the degree the Supreme Court finally ordered that schools be integrated, if necessary, by forced integration, busing.
Yes.
What is your view of the mixing of the races in school by forced integration?
Well, again, my views simply square with what's happening now. It is not uncommon for us to see high school graduates who cannot read at a sixth grade level.
True.
And this is not happening to a few.
Both colors.
This is happening to a lot of students.
Yep, both colors.
And so the solution to educating and developing, which is the purpose of education, to develop young people and to strong, whole, happy, and balanced adults, is not working. So integrating schools isn't the thing. And another shocker, neither is education. We need it to learn how to make contact with the technology that is prevalent in our world. We need it to read. We need it to write. We need it to add, subtract, and multiply. But what makes human beings, it begins long before a child gets to school. And when a child doesn't get this ingredient that comes from a whole family or a particularly loving mother or a particularly loving father, then it's possible to go all the way to dissertation time at doctoral school and be a fool. If education was the solution to all of our problems in society, then we would be hard-pressed to explain how the nation is in the mess that it's in view of the fact that very educated, the best educated lawyers and lawmakers run our country. Washington is full of them. There is a Rhodes Scholar in the White House, but education didn't do it for him. You see, something's wrong with our president. He cannot even see that he's moving in the wrong direction. He thinks he's moving in the right direction, and his degrees didn't fix that. So while I am a recipient myself of a lot of education, most of what I've learned in life had nothing to do with degrees and credentials and school books. That only helped me to write it and explain it, but it didn't help me to be it.
Okay. That was a cool speech, but it kind of...
It answered your question.
Well, it didn't to my satisfaction, or maybe I just need to rephrase it. In other words, you think that there should not be integration in the schools.
No,
you...
I didn't say that at all.
Integration
didn't change. Didn't help.
Didn't help.
No, because...
Did it make it worse?
Yes.
So then,
begin to look to integration for a solution that wasn't there. Because
okay.
We are back to... In Milwaukee, like our next cover story will say, certain magnet schools that give inner-city kids a choice. And some of them are choosing all-black schools. and in some cases, all-black male schools.
Okay.
Like St. Aloysius.
Okay. My question
black
is...
black males in New York.
All right. Emmanuel, why is that better?
I didn't say that it was better. I'm saying what we are seeing is the reading scores, SAT scores improved.
Well, I asked you if it made it worse, and you said yes.
I said that...
You said yes.
I said to look to integration for a solution that isn't there made it worse.
I see. That's okay. So not the actual fact of the integration, but to look to that as a solution made it worse. Is that correct?
No.
Doggone, I'm having a hard... I guess I'm just not getting it.
We have been living in the time of wise men. Wise men would have told us in the early 60s that to mix white and black children together does not necessarily ensure proper education. The proper education can occur in an all-black classroom, in an all-white classroom, in a mixed classroom, in any kind of classroom. It isn't the racial mixture in the classroom.
Okay, then
the direction, the curriculum, whether or not the children are coming to school from homes prepared to learn.
Okay, Emmanuel, why, arguably, one thing you did agree on, I hope you agreed on it earlier, I said race relations now in America are getting worse. I think you agreed with that, didn't you?
Yes.
Okay. We now have more or less integrated schools.
Yes.
So why are race relations getting worse?
Well, I think race relations are getting worse because this might be a little kajinxed, but in the 60s, we didn't do what many other groups who've come to this country and who were, in any instance, discriminated against. There are some people that simply pulled their belts tight, ignored, walked around the discrimination, built their economies, built hospitals, built factories, became very independent, and winked at discrimination and didn't give a damn about who don't like them. And instead of doing that, blacks were encouraged by a liberal elite who couldn't stand us then, hate us even worse now, to go into a very different direction and beat against the infrastructure of government as a way of addressing our problems. It didn't work. It was the wrong direction. And now we still aren't there, and we have $300 billion that sprinkle through our fingers every year, and we still aren't there. It was the wrong direction. And if we had simply looked at racism for what it was, and I said it facts to you, or I think I sent something to you, that racism doesn't have the power that we're all trying to pretend it does. It doesn't have the power, because if it does, there could be no Emmanuel McLittles or Wilt Chamberlains or O.J. Simpsons or Clarence Thomas. There could be none of us, you see. So, and we're not extraordinary people. We're just normal, ordinary, run-of-the-mill people who made it around what must have been some degree of racism. I don't know how much racism I incurred because I never looked. I was busy.
All right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Emmanuel McLittle. Where are you calling from, please?
Good morning, Art. Good morning, Emmanuel.
Good morning, sir.
Grew up on Mack Avenue.
East Side.
But I live in Bloomfield Hills now.
You too have made a transition.
Sort of.
Yes.
Art wouldn't necessarily be aware of the gap, but one of the things, gentlemen, I'd like to point out is, you know, I think you both got a little bit sidetracked on some of the other issues here, but in your magazine, Destiny, which I have occasionally read. Unfortunately, I'm not a regular reader. I think I will become one.
Yeah.
The issue that really is important here, Art, I think, is how blacks who don't view liberal ideas and racism as the primary determinant of the outcome of their life can overcome that.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Well, I do agree with that. I do agree with that. The sidetracked areas that we've been into occur in his views regarding interracial marriage and that sort of thing. So I'm not sure if that's a sidetrack.
I have a divergent view from yours, Emmanuel. I mean, I think that blacks, particularly black males, have a benefit, Rodney King notwithstanding, when it comes to women, particularly black women. Black women are a universe of diversity, ranging from ebony, beautiful black women to women who look like Marilyn Monroe,
yeah,
who are black. Were you aware of that, Art?
Oh, yes.
Okay. Now, so I have a problem with, you know, taking a hard position. I'm married to a Cape Verdean woman who's very fair but more African than me.
So, Emmanuel?
Well, I don't have any comment on this man's choice of marriage. I'm glad to hear that he is a light thinker and that he is not only not on Mack Avenue no more, and he and I know what Mack Avenue is like. They had good corned beef down on Mack Avenue, but a lot of other things there too. I appreciate your call.
One question I would have for you, Emmanuel, and that is, how has objectivism and maybe ideas from people like Ayn Rand...
I loved her writing.
I thought you did.
I loved her writing.
All right, my friend. Thank you very much for the call. What about welfare, Emmanuel? If you were the welfare czar or the one who could change it in our lifetimes, as we've known it, as the president has not yet done, which he promised he would do, what would you do with welfare?
I don't know how much time I would give individuals to get off of it, but I think that there, in a future world, it wouldn't exist. I've never had it.
That is now the debate. How much of the future world should we continue to devote to the welfare system?
We're not Burmia, anything like that. We do have enough wealth in this country to take care of obvious, I wouldn't want to see a 75-year-old woman who's blind and live alone and doesn't have any money and getting robbed every 3 or 4 days. There's something that we can do. I don't know that I would even give her welfare. I would hope. One of my hopes and aspirations has to do with the changing of people's hearts and minds, and that in my future world, her family, her neighbors, would make the kind of sacrifice out of a simple love for the woman that she could live very comfortably and very secure. But we, not only do we not want to help our neighbors, we throw our parents away. We put our parents in places where they're beaten and abused.
I've got a question for you, Manuel. Why are there cultural differences between blacks and whites?
Know that there are huge cultural differences. I think that we all live in a culture called American culture, and that blacks have been encouraged to reject it. And we've been encouraged to reject it, not because we genuinely hate it, but because this is another point that I've listened to you and I know that you disagree with. But I must say that I learned the lesson as early as 10 years old, living on a block where I didn't have the money to buy a bike, never had a bike until I got to be an adult. But there was a kid on the same block who had a beautiful 10-speed. I mean, I hadn't heard anything about a 3-speed, but this guy had a 10-speed, beautiful red. I wanted it. And the inference that we sometimes hear that there is no one that wants to control the wealthiest, the most powerful, the most obviously gifted nation in the world is a fallacy. There are people who want to change us. There are people who want to manipulate, to deal with us, to put us down. And I say part of my reasons for being and doing what I do is I want to see large numbers of my kind racially on the right side of a great struggle that I believe is coming to this country. I don't want us to be on the side of those people that I intuitively know hate our guts. And we misconstrue who those people are. We traditionally think that the haters of blacks are conservatives. But the true haters are very, very Marxist in their thinking.
All right. Let's go to Florida. You're on the air with Emmanuel McLittle. Hello.
Hello?
Hello. Where are you, sir?
I'm calling from Sarasota, Bill.
Sarasota. Hi, Bill.
Hi. This fellow, what's his name again?
Emmanuel McLittle.
Hello,
yes,
sir. Emmanuel McLittle made a mention before of something that is crucial to what he's talking about. That's really the basic reason for what, for all the other things you were talking about now are just skirting the issue. And he mentioned it before.
Lay it out.
The home. The home, you graduate from high school. Say you graduate or you don't graduate, whatever. You grow up, you have children, and you have no idea, except for maybe from your parents, maybe taught you a little bit here and there, and what you saw around you. But do you ever get educated, when you get married, you have children, what to do with that child? Yeah, all the education covers everything, but it doesn't teach you how to raise a child.
Yes.
Properly.
Yes.
This is where it starts.
Yes.
This is the beginning. This is actually the beginning. If you don't have that, all the cultural differences don't make a dime.
That's right. And if you don't have it, in the first 12 years of life, you're out of the oven and almost done. I can't tell you. I wish I had 3 more hours to tell you the suffering, the psychologically skint knees, the hurting that I've done, the overcoming of certain blocks in my own mind, getting beyond my own troubles. And it all came from having never experienced a whole happy environment. And this is an embarrassing thing for black people to talk about. But it must be discussed. Because if we continue...
All right. Here is where I want to stop you for a second. We all know bad stats in the black community.
Yes.
25% of blacks in jail or on parole, whatever it is.
Yes.
Families broken up, numbers of single family households, black women pregnant and early, all the rest of it.
Yes.
Why is that, Emmanuel? Is that cultural, or is that because of racism?
I don't think it's for racism at all.
Okay, why?
I think that in the early 1900s, there was for black America the same scenario that existed for Emmanuel standing on the porch on 12th and Claremont. I had to make a decision, and I wrestled with that decision for 3 days. That car was the only thing that I had, and yet it was the only thing that I could sell, let go, and move and change my destiny.
Yeah, but
we had an opportunity to do that.
Okay, now you're back to telling me about Emmanuel. I'm asking you why the black community as a whole right now.
What you need to do a little bit is listen more, Art.
I have been laying back.
What happened to me as an individual happened to a whole group of people. We had a similar decision to make in the 1890s and 1900s. And they were actually, the different routes were presented to us in the form of W.E.B. Du Bois and Booker T. Washington. One suggested that we overlook, that we get over our pain of slavery and begin to work hard to develop trades, to go to school, to become lawyers and doctors and build our own destiny and fortunes. And another one suggested to us, let's start the NAACP so that they can collect funds from liberals and work toward what provides for us a means to beat against government in protest.
All right, hold it. We're at the bottom of the hour. Hold it right there. We'll be back to you. Emmanuel McLittle is my guest, founder, publisher, editor-in-chief of Destiny Magazine. There is more to come.
This is Premier Networks. That was Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM on this Somewhere in Time. Premier Networks present Art Bell Somewhere in Time. Tonight's program originally aired December 20th, 1995.
Good morning, everybody. Good to be with you. We're talking with Emmanuel McLittle. He is my guest. He is the editor, publisher, chief guy at Destiny Magazine. And we'll get back to him in just a moment.
You're listening to Art Bell Somewhere in Time. Tonight's broadcast of Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell was recorded on December 20th, 1995.
Back now to Emmanuel McLittle. Emmanuel, you said I should listen a little more. I think that translates to you wish I agreed with you a little more. In other words, again. I am hearing what you're saying, and I am comprehending it. I'm not necessarily agreeing with you fully, which you're feeling, I know. But I think if you look back on the amount of time that I've spoken...
Very little feeling, Art.
...that I have spoken, we began at 11, we're 2.5 hours into it now, I would bet that you had more airtime than I've had. So, you're getting your say. Are you not?
I haven't measured. I'm having fun.
All right. Here comes another call. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Emmanuel McLittle. Where are you calling from, please?
Loveland, Colorado.
Welcome.
Thank you. Good evening. Mr. McLittle, I have read your magazine and enjoyed it. Two issues you've brought up I feel very strongly about. One I agree and the other I disagree with you.
Okay.
First of all, when it comes to liberals, you couldn't be more right. I feel that conservatives use their power and resources to empower big government and big business to continue exploiting people.
Yes.
And liberals, on the other hand, find ways to pacify the serf class in America, otherwise known as the poor,
yeah,
to keep them from revolting against the system. So I appreciate what you have to say, and I think you're quite right on. However, when it comes to mixed-race marriages, I think you couldn't be more wrong. I'm a member of a multicultural family. I have Asians, Native Americans, and Afro-Americans, and Caucasians. My husband is Afro-American, and my children range from, we have four, blonde and blue-eyed to ebony black. And we didn't marry because we had psychological problems we needed to work out. And our marriage wouldn't have lasted as long as it has or been as successful if our marriage was based solely on physical attraction. And I feel that when people see us or meet us and are bothered by the choices we have made, because the fact that we are
Did you say people are bothered by your choice?
Like you.
I don't know you, you've attacked it.
Okay,
so
one of you, hold it. One at a time here or we can't hear you.
All right.
You said something, Emmanuel?
I care nothing about who this old lady marries.
I think you're concerned for society in general and what will progress it and what will hurt it.
Let me ask you an honest question.
Sure.
Do you see the good that you've described in your marriage to be dominant in mixed marriages?
Yes.
Oh, I don't.
Well, I do, and I've seen stats that prove that, unlike the stats you quoted, which cite the opposite. And the majority of my friends are in a similar situation to mine, as are the majority of my family members, and I see only positive outcomes as a result of it.
Let me ask you one more. Can I ask you one more question?
Sure, ask me.
I wonder how you would explain the fact that throughout the entire history of the world, nearly everyone marries a person from their own race. Why is that?
I think if it's true, that's because they have limited choices. For example, in Asia, I'm the majority of people I meet and encounter are Asian.
I don't know if that's correct. You know what I'm saying.
I know what you're trying to imply.
Of everybody that's ever lived married their own kind. Do you think that that's crazier than the opposite? I mean, how do you explain that?
I'm explaining it by saying we have, oftentimes, we have limited choices. fortunately, I grew up in an area where I had a variety of choices and a variety of people I could get to know and interact with, and it broadened my horizon.
But it still happens in America, where we run big part in America, and yet most people marry their own kind. And you think that it's because they have limited choices?
If most people engage in a certain activity, it doesn't condemn it, nor does it make it right. In America,
so
is
something wrong with blacks who marry blacks?
Something's wrong with people who think we should be limited in our choices of our friendships and marriages based on skin color.
Oh.
Period. And as I was going to say, I think what bothers you...
I don't think there should ever be a limit to friendship.
Well, I think you're trying to imply that there should be a limit on marriage, and marriage is preceded by friendship.
Or followed by one of the two. All right, ma'am, thank you very much. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Emmanuel McLittle. Hello.
Oh, hello, sir. I was getting into Art Belair.
You are.
Oh,
you're
how
on
are you, sir?
I'm fine. You're on the air.
Thank you.
Where are you calling from?
This is out of Reno, Nevada.
All right.
This is old Tom B., actually the son of William A. This is Thomas A. here talking at you. Give you another clue with old William S.
Well, look, sir, do you have a question?
Yeah.
All right, go ahead.
Well, what do you got going on tonight besides old sick Willie over there in Bosnia?
I'll see you later, sir. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Emmanuel McLittle. Hello.
Ding dong, Mr. Bell. This is Pete in Portland.
Pete, yes.
Yes, and hello, Mr. McLittle.
Hello, sir. How are you?
I correctly perceive that you have no desire for mixed marriages or see a good reason for them, but you do not condone the breakup of people who are, you know, trying to respect each other and make the best of whatever their situation is.
Not in the least. In fact,
exactly.
I think I have to reveal something to you quite personal. There is mixed marriages in my own family. And once, I'm talking about marriage now, quite a sacred institution for me. Once the marriage has taken place, you never give it up.
Exactly.
Regardless of who you're married to.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me tell you a little something about myself. My father was the Assistant Executive Secretary of the Michigan Education Association.
What's his name?
Yes, and the Executive Secretary of the Oregon Education Association.
I see.
And he, as a labor union leader, is obviously a socialist. And he's the one who tutored me at the age of 3 and 4 in algebra and mathematics and phonetics, because I was reading the Dick, Jane, and Spot stuff.
Yeah.
Because I was having trouble in school.
Yeah.
He's the one who told me that American education was woefully inadequate compared with European education. He grew up in Germany.
Yes.
Now, we went round and round about what was going on in America vis-a-vis unions and socialism in general. And I've come to discover that this socialist welfare state we have now is actually based on the model of plantation socialism. And the thing about it is, the divisions between us are not by color. They're by who works in the big house and who is the field hand. Everybody else who's not in the government, in other words.
Yes.
Do you agree with that?
No.
No, you don't.
I think there is a bigger difference between us. I'm not a religious person at all. I attend no church. I worship no way except in a small room in my home, sitting still. But I think underneath all of the issues that we fight about is those of us who accept a false, bogus notion that we climbed out of some pool of snot, rather than the fact that there is an intelligence in the universe that created us. I think that difference is the greatest difference between us, that we love or hate each other on this earth, that underneath all of the wars where we seem to be fighting about things like economy and borders and territories, the truth, and I believe I've seen this in history, the truth is that there's always a side that has a view of our origin different than the other. That, to me, is a greater difference underneath our consciousness, because we talk enough about what we all know in our conscious mind, but there's so much stuff underneath there that we frequently don't say anything about. And I think that, is there something bigger than us in the universe? And are we different than animals? And each of us have decided that on our own individually, and we cling to or divide from each other. In many instances, based on that unconscious question.
All right, Emmanuel, back to the phones. You're on the air with Emmanuel McLittle. Hello. Where are you calling from, please?
Hello, Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
All right.
Well, first of all, Art, you asked him a question in the last half hour about why the percentage of black men is high in crime and everything else.
Yes.
I think I have the answer to that. I don't understand why it hasn't came about before. If you have, say you have 10 white men and 2 black men. One white man commits a crime and one black man commits a crime. In the black race, that's 50%. In the white race, that's 10%.
No, sir, your numbers are incorrect, because when we talk about the percentages, we're talking per capita. We're not talking the kind of numbers you're talking about. Is that correct, Emmanuel?
Yes, that's correct.
Uh-huh.
And this is quite blunt, but many of those who are in jail who happen to be black, they're there because they committed crimes. And sadly, some of those crimes were committed because for 30 years we've actually been encouraged to. And in subliminal ways, we've been given messages that it's okay to hate whites, that it's okay to rape, rob, and steal from them. And we can even make songs and rap music and movies that actually depict our hate for whites. And we've been encouraged
to do this. Is that a culture, Emmanuel?
It's political.
It's political?
Yes.
It's not a culture?
No, I don't think it. Culture is what people eat and the way they think and the way they dress and where they go to church and what. That's culture.
Mm.
This tendency towards indoctrinating people to believe, and I think I'm not trying to take all of the responsibility for where blacks are in the world today, but there was a lot of it that came from manipulating liberals, and liberals is a nice word for what these people who cannot live without controlling other people has done to this group. And there's one thing that might be a little bit different in terms of my way of speaking, that what I don't see, and I'm happy that I don't see it amongst my people, is we do commit serious crimes against each other and whites, but we are not committing the biggest crimes. We're not in any of those planning sessions that take place behind closed doors in the UN and Switzerland and The Hague and on some of those submarines where more meetings are held than you can shake a stick at. And we're not amongst those people who want to manipulate an entire world into a form that is politically expedient for a very few people. We're not committing the largest of the crimes.
You are suggesting there is a kind of a cabal of high-powered people in high-powered places that are setting the agenda for the world.
Much of our agenda.
And for blacks, along with everybody else.
Blacks, yes. And blacks is merely a tool to make it happen in the United States. And our instability is no coincidence. Nobody that loves his country will allow, just in the area of TV alone, to have transmitted those messages that have been transmitted to the minds, especially baby boomers like you and I, Art, in our child. Nobody could allow that to happen unless they had bad designs on the country.
All right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Emmanuel McLittle. Hello.
Hi there.
Hi, where are you?
I'm in Quincy, Illinois.
All right.
Basically, I have a question, Mr. McLittle. I'm of the generation or the offspring of those interracial marriages, and I was curious as to your opinion on basically where we fall into this whole race category.
Well,
I can't speak specifically about you, you understand, but I do know that anybody with a willingness to read and research knows that during the 60s, a lot of the marriages and the sexual exchange that took place between radical blacks and feminist whites had nothing to do with love or concern for the offspring that is now in their mid-20s. And these groupings is only one example of what I mean when I say that there is a getting together by different races that is as devious and as dishonest as devious can get.
Well, see, that says or has the implications that my whole existence is based on deviousness.
No, sir, I don't want to talk about you personally. I don't know your mother or your dad or your... I don't know how your parents... I'm talking about a group... A mentality that existed in the 60s.
Yeah, and this is where I think you're dead wrong, Emmanuel. There are some marriages that were based as you suggest. There are also interracial marriages that are based on nothing more than any other marriage is based on, and that is mutual attraction, friendship, love, and eventual maturing of that love, or a breakup, whichever way it goes.
Let me ask you this, Mr. McLittle. Do you think that over the course of time that we should, evolve away from individual races, or like races, and be as one as a human race? I mean, I had someone ask me when I was applying for college what race I categorized myself under. And I looked at the man, honestly said, human. And he told me not to get smart with him. He was very offended. And yes, it is a smart comment, but it is also a very true comment. And I don't categorize myself as being black or white.
Yes. You make a good point, and I can't tell you what my view would be in a world where we have transcended. God hope that we do transcend, because we are much more than our skin colors, but we are not in that world now, you see.
But if we remain separate, Emmanuel, we'll never be in any other world.
It is futile and immature to want to meld the differences by way of skin color when the real differences are at a deeper level. The real differences between blacks and whites is not racial.
Okay, but what you seem to say is that it'd be okay if eventually someday those differences occurred naturally, but you...
are not willing to take that path to get there.
Yeah.
No, I don't think there needs to be a path taken. I don't believe that we are like animals. I believe that a greater intelligence than you and I has spread the colors on this earth and trees, animals, and people. And it is not my prerogative, in my view, to try to remove it. I think that it is a brilliant design to have the different kinds of people that exist. And I think all of those people ought to remain in existence until something smarter than me and you changes it.
But see, perhaps that something that's smarter than you and I is our own innate sense of evolution as a humanity, as a human race.
That's bull.
Excuse me?
I think it's bull.
All right, there you go. That's pretty intelligent right there. See, I don't understand why you...
Yeah, I'm not sure that response is that of a free thinker. I'm sorry, Emmanuel. You're welcome to say what you want, as I said, and I'm letting you say what you want.
Yes.
But... But I don't regard that as necessarily free thinking. It's I think that what you call free thinking is conservative thinking, really.
Yeah.
Right? Is that? I mean,
then you being a conservative, you and I ought to agree on most things, huh?
Well, I think we do on a lot of things. For example, I agree certainly with you on what the liberals have done to the minorities in this country, not just blacks. And I think there has been a very great deal of damage done. Where we disagree, apparently, is in the way that this damage can be corrected. Listen, we're coming to the top of the hour, Emmanuel.
Yes.
And I will give you a choice to either go to sleep gently now or to stay around for another hour.
I'm having more fun now.
Well, in that case, stay tuned. There is more fun ahead. My guest is Emmanuel McLittle. He is the editor-in-chief of Destiny magazine. He grew up in Detroit in a rough neighborhood, and he got out. He is out. He's in Oregon now. And we're talking about race relations and race generally, and we'll be back and do more of it. You're listening to the best in live talk radio. That's right, live. It's happening right now. From the high desert, I'm Art Bell. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Art Bell Somewhere in Time. Tonight's broadcast of Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell was recorded on December 20th, 1995. Somewhere in Time on Premier Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from December 20th, 1995.
And this is not the home of your normal talk radio.
Coast to Coast AM sure sounds great in the middle of the night, but you know, you don't have to be nocturnal to enjoy this amazing show. The Coast Insider is your key to a normal life. For 15 cents a day, you can wake up refreshed knowing that last night's show is waiting for you with podcasting. As a member, you'll have access to our monthly live chat sessions with George Noory and special guests. The Coast Insiders Club is a must-have feature for all Coast to Coast AM listeners. Visit coasttocoastam.com to sign up today.
Looking for the truth? You'll find it on Coast to Coast AM.
Let's talk a little bit about the shadow government. Do you believe it's there?
Yeah, we've heard that term, you know, for so many years, and I thought it was this group in the Netherlands that sit behind smoked windows and make decisions like, you know, giant players of chess. But it isn't. We don't have the government anymore. What we have is a loose coalition of bureaucracies. But we have no representation in that government. So when I look at the Constitution, I see it as a really inspired and eternal document that has been sidestepped in almost every legal way possible. So the process itself has been intentionally manipulated to facilitate a certain style of government. And it's taken a while to set up, but I think it's set up now and it's working just the way they like it. We need a systemic change in order to let the Republic be representative of the people again.
You're listening to Art Bell Somewhere in Time. Tonight's broadcast of Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell was recorded on December 20th, 1995.
My guest, of course, is Emmanuel McLittle. He is the founder, publisher, and editor-in-chief of Destiny magazine. We'll tell you at the end of the hour here, once again, how to get a copy of that if you would like it. We'll give out the 800 number, so get a pencil ready. Right now, he's back on the air with Charlie. Both of you are back on the air again.
Well, I was simply saying that conservative policy has simply been devastating to black people, simply devastating. And the worst part of it has been their interference in the criminal justice system. When you have conservatives cutting out inner-city programs and saying, let's build more prisons, well, those prisons they're putting black people in those prisons. And they talk about, let's be less lenient with
with the laws, those black people, a young black person that commits a crime right now can expect to do a lot more time rather than any type of rehabilitation type program. Those are the conservatives who are locking up black people, and it amounts basically to a return to slavery, so I'm sure a lot of conservatives are pleased with that.
You're typically uninformed, and I would suggest to you that most large cities have more black judges sitting on benches than you obviously realize.
No, I understand that.
Just a second, sir. It is mostly black judges sentencing young black men to prison. You need to check your facts.
Well, you need to check the fact of who's setting the law. A judge does not make the law. A judge only goes by the law. The people that are sitting making the laws are the white guys with the power going, okay, politically, I think it would be better for me if some kid robbed the liquor store, for me to give him, say, 8 years rather than 2 years, therefore I'll look tough on crime.
It is conservatives who, regardless of why they did, they left us alone. It is you liberals that mellowed all of the life and ingenuity and genius out of us.
Is that right?
And yes, it is. And I tell you that I've heard a couple of people say that I was angry. If there's anything that capable of upsetting me, it's liberalism.
Let me ask you a question. Some of the best doctors that we have right in this country are black doctors. Isn't that correct? You when you talk about genius. Do you know that a lot of those black doctors took advantage of quote unquote liberal programs to get into school?
You almost imply that if liberalism didn't give it to them, they wouldn't be capable of having it.
No, but I'll tell you this. Certainly doctors who have been doctors for 20 or 30 years, that's absolutely correct. If you go back to the 1960s, how many highly trained black surgeons did we have back then?
You know, your kind is such cowards that you're not strong enough to wreak the havoc that you want to wreak on this country because you resent its predator.
No.
You have to use a race of people as a battering ram to get policies through that shape us in a way that none of us can recognize. I say that there is so much disingenuousness in liberalism.
No.
It sickens me when I see President Clinton put his hand on a liberal. It's not about
giving anybody anything, but it's because we understand that there has to be a ladder in society and that some people in society have a head start over other people. Not because they're smarter, not because they're better, but because of who they are and where they were born. And let's face it, a white guy born to a rich family, no matter how intelligent he is going to have a head start over a black person born in the ghetto surrounded by drugs.
But I came from the ghetto.
Absolutely. There are a lot of successful black people who came from the ghetto.
How do you explain them?
But shouldn't we
explain intelligent black people who came from the ghetto?
I think there are just as many intelligent black people born in the ghetto as there are white people born in a rich family. Unfortunately, you have so many factors around you when you are in the ghetto, such as drugs, such as gangs. It's very difficult even for an average person to break out of that.
Let me inform you of something.
But
blacks by the millions are learning something that liberals haven't caught on that we're learning yet, and we're changing our minds quietly all over this country, and we see you, my friend, for what you are.
Don't take this personally.
I'm talking about liberalism. I'm not talking about an individual. But you are being seen, and you're so blind that you don't know that the Bloods and the Crips and the gangsters, the blacks that are in jail, we have 30 years of watching you manipulate us.
Wow.
We see you clearly.
I think unfortunately, whether you're talking about extremism from a white extremist such as Tom Metzger or an extremist like yourself, I don't think that you can speak for the majority of black people.
All right, listen.
All
right, we'll hold it there. He called you. Are you an extremist, Emmanuel?
I don't think so. Common sense owns what I think. Truth.
All right. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Emmanuel McLittle. Hello.
Hello.
Where are you?
St. Paul, Minnesota.
Okay.
Art, I don't know what's wrong with you tonight, but, you know, I've always been so impressed
you know, for the last, we haven't gotten you here that long. I think it's a little better than a year. But you're not yourself tonight.
How so?
It's just something I'm noticing. When you were interviewing Harry Brown,
mm-hmm.
you didn't ask him where he lived. And the gentleman that was talking about that
Emmanuel McLittle's a bio, which he sent to me,
uh-huh.
it specifies where he lives.
Uh-huh.
So
well,
I didn't have to ask. It is part of
but
the story.
Is speaking about the apparent fixation.
Yeah, it is part
exactly,
of the story. Well,
exactly.
Look, I'm not fixated on it. If necessary, Emmanuel, I would be glad to reread for you, word for word, your own words in your own bio, which stresses where you came from. Is that accurate?
No, I don't see a stress in it at all.
Okay.
The bio is 4 or 5 pages, and you might be reading a line or two that mentions where I currently live.
Well,
there's no stress in it at all. What I'm happy to see is the number of people that are what I call perceptive, a tool that we need in these very, very slick 90s where so much of what's wrong is being presented as though it were good. And it's over the heads of a lot of people. But your audience, very intelligent audience.
Oh, yes.
And they see things that I sometimes worry. Boy, do people see that? And do people hear what Tom Brokaw tried to do today? And, man, I'm happy lately that so many people see what I see. We stand a chance against those people who some of us want to deny exist. Many of us see them.
In the argument that you just had, or the discussion, we'll call it, with Charlie.
Yes.
I found myself easily, without strain, on your side. You're undeniably right with regard to what liberalism as a political philosophy has done. And you're undeniably right that blacks across America are beginning to slowly change their minds. They're catching on, yeah. I agree with all that, Emmanuel. The only place that you and I differ is in how we are to get ultimately to where the racial differences don't matter. And I think that means a mixing of the races, and you don't. I mean,
I don't.
Yeah, yeah. So that is a difference. We have similarities. We have differences. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Emmanuel McLittle.
Well, how are you, Art?
Fine. Turn your radio off, please.
I did, sir. Once again, you shine brighter than a star.
Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Greeley, about 50 miles north of Denver.
Yes, sir.
I wanted to ask your guest, first again, how old is he?
47.
How old?
47.
47. The woman from Loveland, I really agreed with.
Yeah?
She talked to you for a while about some of the things that... She's from an area, and we've had a very conspicuous thing go on here, and it has had some things to do with color over the last decade. I really think that you, sir, are on the right track. You stand the right ground. You even wield the right sword, but you're hacking at the wrong pieces.
Yeah.
You may be a bit angry, and if you become...
Not usually. I have not developed the ability to be truly objective with a certain kind of person. And liberal is not the word to describe them. This is one of the deceptions that America has swallowed. We think of them as liberals, but they're far more devious than that word would imply. And they have no problems upsetting the pillars and signposts that have guided human destinies to healthier ways of existing since the beginning. They have no problems separating us from that. They are experts at creating a kind of doubt and confusion in individuals and in whole groups of individuals. And it's almost like It's almost like, do you have a computer, sir? Do you ever had a virus? You ever seen the way a virus does? A computer?
Yeah, I knew something about it.
It wreaks havoc, turns things upside down, makes things go off when they should come on, twists things around, and this is more like what liberalism has done to a country that had many of the right goals.
No, I tend to agree with you.
For human beings.
In that extent, I tend to agree with you. Could I ask you a personal question?
Yes, sir.
Do you ever take on temporary help on your ranch?
On my ranch?
Yeah.
Oh, it's not that big. It's only 20 acres. And
I'd love to come work with you for a week or two when you needed help in the spring or something.
I couldn't get rid of you if you ever set foot here. So beautiful.
All right. Thank you very much for the call. The employment line does not begin here. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Emmanuel McLittle. Hello.
Wow, I got through.
Yo, wow, you got through. Where are you?
This is James from Santa Rosa.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, you know, I was listening to you guys talk about the OJ case there for a moment. And I've been listening to everybody talk about black and white and everything else, and it's starting to really burn me. And I looked at that case, and I saw a black man on trial. And he looked guilty, but then I looked at who was investigating the case. And he couldn't be trusted. He couldn't have been trusted to walk a little girl across the street.
You mean Mark Furman?
Mark Furman, yes.
Yeah.
I don't know if he did something wrong or if he did something right. All I know is he should never have been on a case investigating that case. And to me, that's why the jury said, sorry, we can't trust the evidence. We can't convict the man. Who cares if he's black or white?
Yeah.
The problem was with the investigator.
Yes. There's another problem.
What's that?
There was another problem that I would like to make a prediction about.
Okay.
If he had worked through the problems that every man encounters with his wife, his first one, it would have never occurred.
You mean O.J.?
Yes.
Oh, I agree with you. You know, O.J. Simpson had problems in his life, but that had nothing to do with the jury or the decision as far as I see it.
Yeah, but... Emmanuel, here you go again. You're saying that the reason all this happened... Well, O.J. left his black wife and married a white woman.
His first wife.
Yeah.
If he had not left his first wife, it would have never occurred. He'd have never married her. He'd have told her to go home.
But how are we
to
know?
He'd have signed an autograph and said, listen, young lady, go home.
What?
I'm a married man. What are you doing?
Emmanuel, what if his first wife had been Nicole?
His first wife wasn't Nicole.
I understand that. But you're saying if he had never left his first wife, this never would have occurred. That's fine in hindsight.
I'm trying to get something across. More than leave his first wife, work, understand, persevere through that time that's difficult for every couple. That's what needs to have happened with O.J., Emmanuel, and many millions of us. Something happens, and I characterized the amount of time when I said when the sex gets customary. And I was no different than most other people. I married my wife at a very young age because simply she was a beautiful woman. An 18-year-old beautiful woman, and that was the wrong reason. She was also a very, very nice person inside, but I didn't discover that for 10 years.
Well, that's no different than many other people. And what my argument with you has been all night is that can be the very same situation with a black man and a white woman, black man, or brown, or any other color, Asian, whatever, these same forces come to bear, and same reasons for initial marriage,
I say with an added complication.
I don't deny that, that there may be an added complication, but the same process over years occurs, and either it matures into a real love, or it does not.
You agree that there was an added complication in interracial marriages?
Oh, absolutely.
We're all the same.
Emmanuel, only because of the present state of society, not because of, in other words, that external complication comes because of external pressures.
I see.
Not because of some basic cultural or significant difference born of skin color.
I see.
First time caller line, you're on the air with Emmanuel McLittle.
This is LaFrance from Austin.
Hello, LaFrance.
Emmanuel McLittle, I think that you are you're right on the money with just about everything that you said, and I think that you're beyond Art and his and the people that are listening's heads.
No, not necessarily, my friend. There are many, many people who understand.
Yes.
It's a sort of a coded speech.
Yes.
Called understanding, common sense, that has been ripped from the psyche of most Americans, not by somebody who did it by accident.
I agree. I totally agree with what you're saying. And I have to contain myself with Art is that he tries to rip you apart.
Only because he disagrees and it's,
but it bothers
he disagrees
him.
Vehemently on perhaps something that he's dealing with himself. And this is the reason that even you, when you make contact with people in your life,
yes,
that disagree with you, don't get too upset.
Yes,
you
yes,
don't know the reasons that they disagree,
yes,
and you don't know. For an example, if you sit down and talk to a white man, are you black?
Yes, I am black.
If you sit down and talk to the average white man, guess what you'll find? He has the same fears, the same struggles, and life has an opposing wind against his face as it does to yours. And you'll find yourself easy to make friends and identify with people and not even see their color anymore.
All right, Emmanuel, we've got to hold it there. Clock says bottom of the hour. We'll be right back. Emmanuel McLittle is my guest. I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM.
The trip back in time continues with Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM. More Somewhere in Time coming up. Present Art Bell Somewhere in Time. Tonight's program originally aired December 20th, 1995.
My guest, Emmanuel McLittle, founder, publisher, editor-in-chief, big guy at Destiny Magazine, and we'll get back to him in a moment.
Take Coast to Coast AM with you anywhere on your mobile phone. CoastToCoastAM.com can be conveniently accessed on your iPhone and most Android platforms, which means that you are never without your Coast to Coast AM fix. If you're a Coast to Coast Insider subscriber, you can listen to the show live in the middle of the night or previous shows 24/7. Plus, you can browse all the great photos, videos, and news stories. Keeping up with Coast to Coast AM has never been easier with our Coast Insider service. Now, we take you back to the past on Art Bell Somewhere in Time.
We're back to it now. Emmanuel, are you there?
I'm here.
You've got a good, strong constitution. You're going to make all 5 hours here.
Oh, I loved every minute of it.
Oh, I'm glad. All right. Wild Card Line, you're on the air with Emmanuel McLittle. Hello.
Oh, hi, Art. This is Ed. I'm calling from San Diego.
Hi, Ed.
How are you doing?
Okay.
Listen, there's one thing, and I wasn't quite sure until tonight, but there's one thing I'm convinced of for sure, and that Art Bell has the best show ever. This program is the most exciting that I've ever heard, bar none.
I appreciate it.
I really thank you for that.
Thank you.
I think there's a way to look at the conflict and understanding. I think Manuel is speaking in terms of concepts or a more right-brain approach, and you're speaking in specifics or a left-brain approach.
Well,
and a number of the callers have tried to point this out. I think the emphasis on the racial aspect is really sort of taken away from the message that he has. And what I do is I'd like to ask a question of Emmanuel.
Sure.
How do you feel about the no-fault divorce? My feeling on that is
didn't help us.
Wait a minute, sir. You asked him how he felt. Let him answer.
Okay. Didn't help us very much. You've heard me say several times that there comes a period when difficulty in all of the fantasies that we went into the decision to select some of our mates is stripped away 6, 8, 9, 10, 12 years for some people. A difficulty arises that is painful, confusing, and sometimes puts in us a flight or fight response, and usually we run away from a pain that we don't want to face. It is exactly the pain that we need to face that gives us a boost into that second layer of maturity that is in everyone if we would just stay. And there are other things in life that does it, you know, basic training. There's a lot of things that does it. But one thing for sure that does the most for men and women to reach this level of maturity and perceptiveness is weathering that storm. And if I've done anything right in my life, is I'm married to my wife for 28 years, February 16th, and it has been stormy. But recently, there is a friendship growing that I wouldn't exchange for anything.
Well, that's really refreshing. You know, you listen to all the talk shows, you listen to the psychologists that come on the air. The attitude is, basically, if you got a problem, then ditch the guy, you know?
Yeah.
If you don't feel like the relationship is working, then ditch them. And and that seems to be the attitude, you know, and I've been married for 29 years. My wife got a lot of money, and now she's decided to get a divorce. And
yeah.
I talk to psychologists, whoever I can talk to, and they all just say, "Well, you know, if she wants a divorce, there's nothing you can do about it." You know,
yeah.
It's like, and it really, I understand the reason for the court systems and whatever from the no-fault divorce. But you talk about the, you know, the basics of the family, the ability to, greet those issues and to learn who you are. And I think that, even more than any racial kinds of difficulties, I think the no-fault divorce has really, really hurt that problem. I call it no-blame or irresponsible divorce is the way I call it. Because you don't even get a chance to say,
Do what you can to be patient with your wife and park your car outside our new house. And if you loved her, make sure that if she separates from you, she doesn't do it with a firm knowledge that you loved in a way that she cannot duplicate. She won't die a happy death, my friend. I'm not saying to wish that on her, but don't yourself give up on it. Something may have happened to her. We're not inside each other's minds. We can't make judgments about, you can't even make a judgment about your wife. I don't know your particular situation, but follow her to work. Get on the freeway and get behind her. 29 years, don't let it go so easy. Make your wife know that there's a love, deep love for her in your own self.
All right. Now it's, you're sounding more like the psychologist.
Sorry.
But that's all right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Emmanuel McLittle. Hi.
Hi, Art. This is Alicia calling from Colorado.
Yes.
Yeah, listen, on a scale of 1 to 10, Emmanuel, 10. I am so pleased to hear from a man, a human being, and a black that seems to have a lot of rationale. And it seems like you've been paying attention. And you know what I'd give the credit to is actual raw experience.
Yes.
And that you're giving this back to your race, letting them know that it's the internal combustion.
Yes.
That they must do it, that our handouts, and I've been so sick of this, Emmanuel, I've called and talked until I'm blue in the face. You can't keep giving handouts and demand a person to be responsible.
Yes.
You cannot spoil children and expect them to be obedient.
Because the stress that comes up through the trunk of a tree and stretches its limbs out to be huge is similar to the same kind of stress that's in human beings. And if you don't let that stress force you to create ways to get your own food, your own housing, so many other things in the wonderful psyche that God has given us, never happens, never grows.
Absolutely not. It takes oppression and resistance. The men should know, because they go to a gym and they work out on equipment to force pressure against the muscle.
Yeah.
To build definition.
I wish they'd do the same for their hearts.
Oh,
I don't see a nation full of men. I see a nation of feminized men who love comfort and won't stand up, won't have conviction, don't stick with their women and children. That's our whole problem, is
Emmanuel,
the lack of men.
Emmanuel, I hope you can reach your people, because I can't.
All right. Thank you very much, ma'am, for the call. Emmanuel, one great argument going on in this country right now about social services involves exactly how we get people off welfare. And everybody wants to change welfare, hates it the way it is, understands the damage, the profound damage it is doing. But we're a nation now, particularly in the black community, but whites too, filled with single-family households, mom, two or three or 14 kids, whatever.
Yes.
And when we, whether it's now or 2 years from now, take mom off of AFDC or welfare, there are infants ranging down to newborns, nearly, who will suffer as a result of that.
Yes.
So we're having a great fight about how we achieve this. How do we do that?
Well, it would be nice if the mentality that split our families and destroyed that structure of our society would admit it and show us all the connection between strong families and an eventual policy that would allow you to take people off welfare within 18 months. But absent any acknowledgement that something went wrong and ripped our families apart, and now, having created these dependent people who could never, like a pet animal, never go out and fend for themselves. Something is gone. I have a problem, a little problem, and I'm in a dichotomy about it, because if I held the pen, I'd sign the legislation tomorrow that in 2 years there is no more welfare, and yet I know and have come in contact and sat in a closed room with people who never function again in life.
Correct. So, is it a generational change, not a 2 year change?
No, no, it's 25 year change, but
oh,
I don't think it's right. If there is a pot that you and I put our money in, you and I ought to agree mostly on where we ought to spend it. And too many people, if there is anything close to freedom in America, it's has to be connected with what we do with our money. And too many people who put their money in this pot don't want it to go to where it's going. And eventually, those people have as much right to withdraw their money from where it's being used as those people who believe they have a right to receive it.
All right. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Emmanuel McLittle. Hi.
Hello, Art Bell.
Hi.
Emmanuel.
Hello.
Yes, Art, a previous caller accused you of being a bigot.
Oh, yes, uh-huh. Where
not
are you?
Not that.
Where
not
are,
that.
Where are you, ma'am?
I'm from Seattle. My name is Roxanne, calling from Seattle.
All right.
I listened to you during the Million Man March, and you were very fair. And I also disagree with Charlie about the funds. All the funds in Seattle are given to the black schools first, the pools get built there first, and then the whites get them last. But I have a question, Emmanuel.
Yes.
What would you think, would you like it if, how would you like it if a Million Man March, a Million Man white men had a march?
I don't put a whole lot of stock in marching. I'm an individualist. If your liver goes bad, it gets fixed one cell at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not right to ask your stomach cells to come over and help the liver. It doesn't work like that.
Do you think it's a double standard?
Yes. And it is a double standard that has so angered whites. I'll tell you, that when I was a psychologist, hostility was my specialty. And you know what happens to a hostility that you forbid a whole race of people from expressing? Do you know how angry whites are, and particularly white men? Liberals have got that right. But part of the reason is that they're never allowed to vent it. They're never allowed to say that they're angry about what has gone on in the black community. And they're angry that such a 12% of the people has tilted the country on one side to the point where we're taking in water in our bowels, so to speak. Whites are angry. And they have a right to be angry.
Well, I'm not white. You know, what would you think if Indians, you know, had a Million Man March? You know, I mean, you know.
I don't think either one ought to have existed.
Oh, I see. So you disagree with that totally?
Well, I disagree with the march. I don't think it was right. And I don't think, if you haven't heard the discussion tonight, you know.
No, I tuned in about an hour ago.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Because one of the things that I say without saying it isn't words that changes people. It is where the speaker is coming from, the intent, the depth, what side of his heart is it coming from? Is it meant to help or is it meant to hurt? And Louis Farrakhan says so many other right things, but from a heart of rage, from an anger towards
Jews. I have
Jews.
No rage in my heart for black people or white people.
Good.
None
then
at all.
Raise healthy
I'm just
children.
Asking you that I didn't know if anyone had called in or not and brought up that question.
The first thing that Minister Farrakhan should have repented of was his involvement in the death of Malcolm X, who did nothing. Who did nothing more than to discover, like I did, that there was something else true other than what he used to think. And the moment that he began to speak it, he was snuffed out.
Mm-hmm.
Haven't you convicted a man that has not legally been convicted?
No, I haven't convicted him. I simply said that he boasted of his own involvement in Malcolm X's death. I ask, what was his crime? What was the crime?
Oh,
and why are you so attentive to my opinion about Malcolm X, Louis Farrakhan, and so less attentive to the sentence that was passed on this man?
The sentence that was passed on him?
On Malcolm X, yes. A sentence was passed on him, and he was gunned down, blown to bits in front of three little daughters
who
watched it.
Yes, indeed. But I don't know for certain that who perpetrated that. I guess you do.
Yes, I do.
Oh, you have personal knowledge.
He's written it. He said it. It isn't the kind of thing that you boast about. But amongst the Nation of Islam, it was a proud deed.
All right, we're running terribly short on time, and before it does run out, I want to give you a chance to give out your number again. So to get your magazine, Destiny Magazine, that follows up, I'm sure, on many of the things you've said here tonight.
Yes.
People would call what number? Say it twice at least.
1-800-545-5842, only after 8 o'clock in the morning. That's 1-800-545-5842. And a stomach for raw common sense is helpful.
All right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Emmanuel McLittle. Hi.
Hi, I was from Seattle.
Yes. Oh, you're on the wrong line, ma'am.
Oh, could you give me the number?
1-800-618-8255. We'll go to that line. West of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Hello, Art.
Hi.
Yes, I'm calling from Los Angeles.
Yes, ma'am.
And I admire what Emmanuel's saying greatly. And my comment would be, would you say, Emmanuel, that most people are scratching at the proverbial surface, the tip of the iceberg, so to speak?
Yes.
And they can't get, their understanding is clouded by what they receive, so that there's so much more to understand. So it's beyond what we
talk about
see
on
and
the
hear.
Surface.
Right. And
what
it's
talk
like
about on the surface, ma'am, is a clever distraction to
right.
avoid the deeper and the inner.
Right.
It's a distraction because it's painful in there.
Mm-hmm.
The discoveries are painful. The truth that you are not is painful. A reality that you didn't create is painful. The brick wall that will smash your head is you don't acknowledge this reality is painful. And we all want to avoid pain.
So
but
in
you
a
cannot.
Sense, in a sense, ignorance is bliss.
Sort of a high.
And the people at that level who stay in an ignorance, so to speak, are easily deceived.
Easily deceived, and they have people who champion that ignorance as if it was something great. And as long as we are a society that surrounds ourselves with a hypnotic kind of championing
right.
of ignorance, then you will always be able to control the masses. And let no one tell you, let no one make you doubt that it's accidental.
Oh, I don't. And I think that... hopefully that you, I know, with your help and others, that art can get beyond the veil. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. On the first-time caller line, as time grows short, you're on the air with Emmanuel McLittle.
Hi, Emmanuel. How are you doing tonight?
Hello, sir. How are you?
All right. Listen, what is your religious denomination?
I don't have one.
Okay. Because
for me, God is something that you read less about, talk less about, and live.
Okay. I'm interpreting your conversation coming from...
Emmanuel, let him finish.
I'm interpreting this as you coming from a spiritual and a more deep inner self. You need to involve yourself in self-reflection. There's several levels that you seem to be talking on. And one is self-reflection and doing things on your own. And taking on responsibility for your place in the world. And it seems that everyone needs to understand that we are all connected in some way in life. And
one of the biggies, sir?
Pardon me?
One of the biggies is facing the pain.
Yes, absolutely.
That life lays right in front of your path.
Oh, absolutely.
Facing it.
I'm currently working two jobs, and one is a real estate agent, and another I work a night job
yeah.
from 5 to midnight, and it's not something I enjoy.
You got kids?
No,
oh.
But I have a fiance,
yeah.
and we are struggling
yes.
every single day and every single hour.
Do you want to talk about what you see in each other?
Absolutely.
Good.
We're struggling in terms of creating our own reality.
Are you honest with her?
Pardon me?
Are you honest with her?
Am I honest with her?
Yes.
In what terms?
Just your discussions. What
oh,
you
absolutely.
See about her, what she sees about you.
All right, look, we're going to have to end this on a high note. Emmanuel, we're out of time. Caller, thank you. All the callers, thank you. Emmanuel, it has been a pleasure, despite what disagreements we've had. It has been a pleasure having you on the program. I don't keep a lot of guests for 5 hours, so there you
I've
are.
I've enjoyed it immensely, Art, and I look forward to the day that you and I sit at the same table and sip a cup of coffee together.
Emmanuel, thank you for hanging in there, and you have a good night.
You too.
Take care, my friend. All right, that's it. Sorry, we are governed by the clock. So, if you would like a copy of this program, you can get it by calling 1-800-917-4278. Let me repeat that number. 1-800-917-4278. 7-8, the program with Emmanuel McLittle. I'm Art Bell from the high desert. Good night, America.